Welcome, everyone, to the Judiciary Committee. We're here this afternoon to hear Senate File 1308. Before we get started, I just wanted to make a couple of opening comments. This is, without a doubt, an emotional issue for folks on both sides of the issue. And I just wanted to remind everyone that I'm going to ask that everyone be courteous and civil. I will tell you that there is security in the room, and I'm going to ask that there be no applauding, no jeering, no demonstrations. And if there is, unfortunately, I will have to have you removed. So just please keep that in mind. That's not something that I want to do. I want you to stay in the room and hear all of the testimony. So again, I'm going to ask everyone to be courteous and civil as we proceed through the afternoon. We have a number of folks that want to testify, both pro and con, and it's my understanding that there has been some organization for purposes of testimony, and the way we are going to proceed is as follows. We're going to give 1 hour to those folks who want to testify in favor of the bill. We are going to give 1 hour for those folks who wish to testify against the bill. I'm going to ask committee members to withhold their questions during that two-hour time span, after which you will have, or the committee itself will have, a period of 1 hour to ask whatever questions that you may have, and we can fully discuss the bill. I will tell you that I'm going to ask each side, pro and con, to keep track of the one-hour time span, and so you're going to have to keep your comments, I would think, fairly brief, so that the folks at the end of the schedule will have an opportunity to speak. With that, I am going to recognize Senator Limmer for the introduction of his bill. And once Senator Limmer has completed his introduction and his remarks, then we will begin with the one-hour time period for the supporters of the bill. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee. And I welcome everyone to the public discussion about this constitutional amendment. As many people know, the constitutional amendment of this topic has been discussed for many years in the Minnesota legislature. And this particular constitutional amendment is to give the public an opportunity to define marriage simply and solely as between one man and one woman in the 2012 election. The proposed amendment will ask voters to participate in a public policy creation. We rarely do that in the state of Minnesota, and over the history of our state, numerous times when the legislature feels that it is an important issue, so important that we realize that we should not make that decision, but we should give it to the public to decide. There's probably something not any more personal than the definition of marriage. It affects everyone in our world. And yet, at the same time, the definition in contemporary times certainly has been in question. The issue has constantly come up, probably for more than 20 years in the legislature, but more acutely in the last 6 to 7 years, when this amendment and versions of this amendment have been proposed in the Minnesota legislature, only to be blocked by members of the legislature. I can't imagine anything more unacceptable than to allow a small group of politicians, or perhaps even a smaller number of judges, to define marriage rather than the people of Minnesota. This proposal is in reference, as I said, regarding the definition of marriage. But it's much more than that. The timing on it has been discussed. And it's intentional. It's intentional to have this discussion today, this year, so that the state of Minnesota, our statewide community, can have an opportunity for over a year to have a public dialogue of where we should go on this public policy and how we define marriage in the state of Minnesota. Over 30 states have had that discussion already and have passed similar legislation. And I believe it's time. This is the time for Minnesota to have this public dialogue. By putting this definition of marriage on the ballot, we can ensure that the definition will accurately reflect the values of the people of our state. Mr. Chairman, one other thing, also in light or the impetus of this, there has been court cases that have recently been filed and dismissed over the definition of marriage. People of the same gender wishing to get married found that the existing Defense of Marriage Act in the state of Minnesota that defines marriage statutorily prevented them from being married. They went to court. The court dismissed the case due to existing law. And due to that, they have publicly announced that they plan on appealing. So this issue is on track to go forward to our court system. Mr. Chair, at this time, I'd like to call upon proponents on behalf of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. I am going to begin with the proponents of the bill, and the first on the list.
Mr. Chairman, we have a change in the order.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morris to join me at the table, and then we'll be followed by Pastor Tom Parrish after she's done. And I understand, according to the rules of this hearing, we will have 1 hour for proponents to give testimony, and then opponents will have an equal amount of time, 1 hour, and then after that, we will have, as a committee, up to 1 hour to discuss and consider decision.
That is correct, Senator Lim.
Right.
Dr. Morris, if you would state your name, please, and pull the mic up nice and close, and folks, you will hear me say over and over, pull that mic up close, because the acoustics in this room aren't all that great. So please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
I am Dr. Jennifer Robach-Morris, founder and president of the Ruth Institute, a project of the National Organization for Marriage. My doctorate is in economics from the University of Rochester in New York. I have taught at Yale and George Mason Universities. I've had fellowships with the University of Chicago, Cornell Law School, and the Hoover Institution at Stanford. I've written 2 books on the social purpose and significance of marriage. I'm the mother of an adopted child, a birth child, and my husband and I were foster parents in San Diego County for 3 years. I urge you to allow the citizens of Minnesota the opportunity to exercise their right to vote on the definition of marriage. Same-sex marriage redefines marriage, and redefining marriage redefines parenthood. Redefining marriage also affects the balance of power between the state and civil society. The citizens of Minnesota have the right to make up their minds about these important issues. The proposed amendment is nothing radical. The people of Minnesota are entitled to say whether they want marriage to remain as it is or whether they want to take their chances with marriage being redefined by activist judges. Letting the citizens vote is just the decent thing to do. The essential public purpose of marriage is to attach mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. We can see the importance of this purpose by taking the perspective of the child. What is owed to the child? Unlike adults, the child does not need autonomy or independence. The child is entitled to a relationship with and care from both of the people who brought him or her into being. Therefore, the child has a legitimate interest in the stability of his parents' union. But no child can defend these entitlements on his own. Nor is it adequate to make restitution after their rights have been violated. The child's rights to care and relationship must be supported proactively before harm is done for those rights to be protected at all. Marriage is adult society's institutional structure for protecting these legitimate interests of children. Without this public purpose, we would not need marriage as a distinct social institution. Now, we often hear the objection that some marriages don't have children, and of course, this is perfectly true. However, every child has parents. Depriving a child of a relationship with his or her parents is an injustice to the child and should not be done without some compelling or unavoidable reason. The objection that some marriages don't have children stands the rationale for marriage on its head. It views marriage strictly from the adult's perspective instead of from the child's perspective. Marriage is not simply a special case of the market, and family law is not simply a subset of property and contract law. Marriage exists to meet the social necessity of caring for helpless children who cannot be contracting parties. Children are protected parties, and marriage should protect the interests of both parents in pursuing their common project of rearing their children. If we replace this essential public purpose with any essential private purposes, marriage will not be able to do its job. But children will still need secure attachments to their mothers and fathers, a need which will go unfulfilled. Same-sex marriage redefines parenthood as a side effect of redefining marriage. Up until now, marriage has made legal parenthood track biological parenthood with adoption for exceptional circumstances. The legal presumption of paternity means that children born to a married woman are presumed to be the children of her husband. With this legal rule and the social practice of sexual exclusivity, marriage attaches children to their biological parents. Same-sex couples, of course, do not procreate together. So-called marriage equality requires a dubious move from the presumption of paternity to the gender-neutral presumption of parentage. This sleight of hand transforms the legal understanding of parenthood. The same-sex partner of a biological parent is never the other biological parent. Rather than attaching children to their biological parents, same-sex marriage becomes the vehicle that separates children from one of their parents. No longer will the law hold that children need a mother and a father. In the wake of marriage redefinition in other states, courts are saying silly things like, quote, "The traditional notion that children need a mother and a father to be raised into healthy, well-adjusted adults is based more on stereotype than anything else," close quote. This statement, made by the Iowa Supreme Court in Varnum v. Bryan, is simply false as a general statement. Mountains of data show that children do need their mothers and fathers, and that children care deeply about biological connections. Please do not change the subject by saying that we already have lots of children unattached to their parents. We should be taking steps to place responsible limits on things like divorce, rather than careening headlong into further and more deeply entrenched institutionalized injustices to children. Equating same-sex parenting with opposite-sex parenting will also marginalize men from the family. By legalizing same-sex unions, the authority of the government declares that mothers and fathers are interchangeable. Society asserts that children do equally well with two mommies, two daddies, or one of each. And when mothers and fathers are interchangeable, it is fathers that will be pushed aside. In Canada, where same-sex unions have been legal since 2005, the birth certificates reflect this marginalization of fathers. Each birth certificate in British Columbia has a place to mention the biological mother. The second parent is listed as father or co-parent, and people check off whether the other parent is the father or co-parent. Fatherhood is officially reduced to a checkoff box. You might object that the birth certificates are purely symbolic and that we could solve this problem by simply recording parent A and parent B. Well, very well, suppose we do that. That must mean we would record two individuals as parents without taking note of which one has any biological relationship to the child. The theory would be that the genetic connection between the child and one member of the lesbian couple should not privilege her in any way over the other member of the couple. But this suggestion shows how deeply same-sex marriage will alter our social structure. The biological principle of determining parentage will have to be suppressed and eventually replaced with another principle. That principle will be that the state will decide who counts as a parent. Instead of simply recording parentage, the state will determine parentage, not in exceptional cases, but routinely. Those of you who think like libertarians should be particularly alarmed by this expansion of the state into the lives of ordinary citizens. This is what, quote, getting the state out of the marriage business will eventually come to mean. I'm often told that I'm on the wrong side of history. The justice of marriage equality is overwhelming, and the younger generation favors it, that same-sex marriage is inevitable. But there's ample reason to doubt this March of History storyline. We were told all these things about abortion, too. You need to accept Roe v. Wade. Abortion is justice for women. Besides, the next generation will completely support abortion rights. But a funny thing happened on the way to history. The people did not perform as promised. At the West Coast Walk for Life in San Francisco, I could see that the pro-life movement is a youth movement, the average age probably around the late 20s. Berkeley Students for Life, Stanford pro-life clubs, and college kids from all over the West Coast car tripping in there. The next generation is not going along quietly with the March of History, and why should they? It's the interests of children that the abortion regime sets aside in order to accommodate the desires of adults, and it's the interests of children that the redefinition of marriage will set aside as well. Advocates of redefining marriage assure us that children will do fine, whatever the loving adults in their lives decide to do. IVF children will be so wanted by their legal parents that the lifetime of separation from their natural parents will not trouble them. Children of unconventional family structures, held together by a series of contracts among adults, those children will just have more adults to love them. Divorce, separation, complex custody quarrels, kids shuttling back and forth with four households with their sleeping bags and backpacks, that's just anti-equality hysteria that will never happen. But biology will reassert itself. Some women who have children with female partners will find that sharing the care of their children with another woman is not as easy as they thought. Some men who agree to be sperm donors as friends will find they want more of a relationship than they thought. And children are going to have feelings about their absent parents, uncomfortable questions about their origins, and complex emotions about being partially purchased. Advocates of so-called marriage equality typically respond, "That's just biology," as if biology were nothing. And I don't think you can fall back on the idea that nothing so terrible has happened in Massachusetts. Redefining marriage redefines the way generations relate to one another. It will take a full 30 years, a full generation, to fully understand the impact of redefining marriage. The only argument for redefining marriage is the so-called equality argument. Equality in this context takes a venerable American concept and twists it out of recognition. Equality used to mean limiting the power of the state to make irrelevant distinctions among citizens. But marriage equality is becoming a battering ram for smashing every aspect of social life that has any hint of sexual differentiation. No more mothers and fathers, only parent one and parent two. And let me remind you that a vast majority of African Americans completely reject same-sex marriage and are deeply offended by the hijacking of the moral authority of their civil rights movement. Previous generations of social experimenters have caused unimaginable misery for millions of people. Particular people advocated the policies that led to today's 50% divorce rate and 40% out-of-wedlock childbearing rate. None of these people has ever been held accountable. The people of Minnesota are sensible, mature people who want to be accountable for what happens in their state. The people of Minnesota deserve a chance to vote. Redefining marriage will have far-reaching consequences that ought to be fully aired. Something this significant should not be rammed down the throats of the unwilling citizenry by the judges. Let the people vote.
Thank you for your comments. Our next testifier is Pastor Tom Parrish from the Hope Lutheran Church.
Mr. Chair, followed by Pastor Parrish, Sheikh Faraz Ahmad will be next on the list.
Welcome to the committee. Please pull the mic forward, identify yourself, and proceed.
I'm Tom Parrish, Senior Pastor at Hope Lutheran Church in North Minneapolis. I come to this hearing today to speak to you both as a Lutheran pastor and as a man who's been married to his college sweetheart for 38 years. I also come as a father and a grandfather who is deeply concerned about the future of this state and marriage throughout this country. I'm here to testify in support of allowing the people of Minnesota to vote on the marriage amendment. I do not come speaking in a vacuum. As a pastor of 32 years, I've sat at the bedside of many gay men, talked to them, prayed with them, and was with them when they died. They're extended members of my family that live in the gay lifestyle. I deeply love them. I deeply disagree with them. First and foremost, historically, Lutherans have believed in the union of a man and a woman. We see it as a sacred right established by the living God through our Savior Jesus Christ, given to people for their relationships, their reproduction, the raising of children, and sexual expression. Marriage is the one universal common thread throughout the world and throughout history. Marriage is not just a religious institution, but society has made it a civil institution as well. It has been recognized as such across all cultures and all societies throughout history. It cannot be changed simply because of the time or a particular interest group. The intent of Almighty God is that marriage is a call for a man to leave his father and mother and be united in one flesh with his wife. Attempting to separate the civil from the divine is like trying to separate the mind from the body. I'm sure a surgeon can do it, but we know the result is the death of the individual. Same-sex marriage is not recognized, supported, or condoned in any manner by historic Lutheran faith in the Bible. While our goal as Christians is certainly to love others, that does not exist in a vacuum. Love is predicated on the truth of God's word and his intent for the world. To love one another from the design of one man and one woman is to reject his blessing and care for all creation. While one could attempt to create a new morality and definition of marriage, that does not change the truth or what is best for society. Same-sex marriage will continually confuse and alienate us from one another and force those who believe in God's word to be lawbreakers by refusing to recognize or conduct same-sex marriages. It has been said that legalizing same-sex marriage will not affect religious institutions. However, just the opposite is true. A Catholic adoption agency was recently forced to close. A church organization lost its tax-exempt status, and a Christian business owner was penalized for her beliefs regarding same-sex unions. In addition, children in our schools will be taught about this new definition of marriage, which will conflict with their beliefs and put them in compromising situations. When believers in Jesus Christ come in contact with the government, their deeply held understanding of marriage is going to be challenged in their workplace, in the courts, professions, and business activities. If same-sex marriage is mandated by the state, it will mean that Christians and people of conscience of other religious traditions will be labeled and treated like pariah. Even though the majority of Minnesotans see marriage as between one man and one woman, all that would be accomplished by legislating a new definition of marriage is the fracturing of Minnesotans. People will be forced into adversarial roles. If Lutherans and Christians in general are forced by law to recognize same-sex unions, it will take away money and time devoted to the needs of the poor, the homeless, single mothers, and families that are in need, and direct it to lawyers and legal proceedings. I would urge you to give Minnesotans the right to vote on this issue of marriage. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to
Senator Limmer.
Invite Sheikh Faraz Ahmad to the table.
If you would please come to the table. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Welcome. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
I am Sheikh Faraz Ahmad, and I am the Imam of Muslim Community Center Ar-Rahman in Bloomington, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify today as a representative from Muslim community in Minnesota in support of allowing the people to vote on the marriage amendment. The purpose of life is to surrender ourselves to God, and our desires must be in accordance with Quran. Same-sex marriage undermines the values and ethics that guide Muslims. As Muslims, we believe that marriage is exclusively between man and woman. It is from nature that God has created humanity on, and it is a loss to everyone when we go against it. By going against the way that Allah has intended, there will be harm brought onto both individuals and families. The Muslim holy book Quran gives us the following verse, and I quote, "Yet it is God alone who has made for you from among yourselves pairs, male and female, and he has made for you from your mates children and grandchildren. He has provided you, moreover, with all that is wholesome in life." Chapter 16, verse 72. The Quran also states that it is he who has created the two mates, the males and the females. Because as Muslims we must follow the guidelines of Quran, we stand firmly against marriage being defined as any other way than between male and female. Any allowance contrary to this would undermine our beliefs and be harmful to all Muslims. Yet we also know that marriage between male and female is something that is true for all major religious faiths and cultures throughout the history. Muslims, Christians, and Jews all hold to marriage between male and female. It is also true for people from all ethnic and racial groups. We are concerned with the consequences to our state of Minnesota if marriage should be legally redefined. The fact that the state will be saying it is no longer important that children be raised by their mothers and fathers, and we are concerned with the impact that it will have on the ability of Muslims and others to practice their religious beliefs. So we ask you to allow the people of Minnesota to vote on this marriage amendment, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite
Senator Limerick. Senator Limerick, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to invite Bishop John Quinn from the Diocese of Winona.
Bishop Quinn, if you would please step to the table. Welcome. Pull the microphone nice and close. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bishop John Quinn. I'm the Roman Catholic Bishop of the Diocese of Winona here in Minnesota. I'm here today representing the Catholic Church. The state's six Catholic bishops believe that the people of Minnesota should have the opportunity to preserve marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Therefore, we support Senate File 1308. Marriage matters to every Minnesotan. Whether or not we personally choose to marry, marriage is the way a man and a woman bind their love into a lifelong commitment that is mutual, is exclusive, and is open to new life, where they promise not only to love each other, but to love any children whom through God's grace they bring into this world. Intuitively, we know that marriage is the natural way we bring together men and women to conceive and to raise the next generation, thus nurturing a thriving natural culture of marriage is critical for the future of society. Over the past few years, however, a number of bills have been introduced in the legislature that sought to transform the institution of marriage. A court case has even been launched with the goal of giving current marriage law all declared unconstitutional. But defining marriage as simply a union of consenting parties will change the core meaning of marriage for every Minnesotan. At best, making that change is an untested social experiment. But at worst, it poses a dangerous risk with potentially far-reaching consequences. By changing or altering the definition of marriage as between one man and one woman for the raising of children, opens the door to a process of redefining marriage whenever there is a need, a social need of a particular group, that could in time result in having no fixed definition of marriage. Back in the early 1970s, experts told us that no-fault divorce would liberate women from bad marriages without affecting anyone else. As expected, the divorce rate skyrocketed. And as because a result of that, many as one-third of women now fall into poverty with their children. High rates of fatherlessness, family fragmentation, impoverish children and leave women with an unfair burden of parenting alone. Children then suffer, but so does the whole of society. When marriage fails in its irreplaceable task of bringing together mothers and fathers with their children, social science was late to catch up with the common sense wisdom that children need both a mom and a dad working together to protect and raise them. But today, it forms a strong basis for the care of marriage. And marriage as the commitment union of one man and one woman finds support not only in social data, but also in long experience and in the wisdom of looking at our history as a human family. In fact, it has long been acknowledged that marriage is not only about the happiness of two adults, but it also concerns the well-being of all society, which is to say, marriage is about the common good. Thus, marriage exists in civil law to provide support for bringing mothers and fathers together to care for their children. There is no doubt about the teaching of the Catholic Church on this issue. Marriage is the union of one man and one woman, and law must reflect what we know from reason, experience, tradition, as well as revelation. The Church also teaches that all of us, including our brothers and sisters who have same-sex attraction, are all children of God with intrinsic human dignity. The Church's teaching on marriage is not a condemnation of others, especially those who are same-sex attracted. The Church surely desires that all persons who describe themselves as same-self attracted, that they not be treated in any way that is discriminatory, that they have the same ability as everyone else to transfer property, to visit or care for loved ones in a hospital. But in order to do that, it does not require transforming the nature of the definition of marriage, which is again between one man and one woman, and is about the well-being of children, not the needs of adults. Whether one accepts this teaching and agrees with the Catholic Church on marriage or not, it is my hope that all can agree on this, that if we are to change such a pivotal and important bedrock of our society, then we should let the people themselves make the definition change and make this decision. As the Church believes that the time has come for voters to be presented directly with an amendment to our state constitution to preserve our historic understanding of marriage, we ask that we be allowed to join 31 other states who have voted to protect marriage. It is time for Minnesotans to have their say. Let the people vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop Quinn.
Senator Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Moshe Feller from St. Paul. Thank you.
Rabbi Feller, welcome to the committee. Please pull the mic up nice and close and speak into it and proceed with your testimony. Please identify yourself first.
My name is Rabbi Moshe Feller, you know, like a jolly good feller, director of the Chabad Lubavitch in St. Paul. I'm here to testify in favor of the marriage amendment, which allows the people of Minnesota to vote on marriage. The Jewish position on marriage is stated clearly in the Torah, the five books of Moses. It is the first commandment which God gave to Adam and Eve after he created them, Genesis 1:28. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply." After their creation, God further stated, Genesis 2:24, "Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." The Talmud comments on this passage, "Therefore, a man shall cling to his wife and not to another man, to his wife and not to someone else's wife, and they shall become one flesh through their children." It is very clear from Scripture that the clinging of humans is to be male and female, and for the purpose of becoming one flesh through their children. This clinging of male to female must be preceded by the act of the male consecrating the female by marrying her. Premarital clinging is forbidden by the Torah. In Judaism, the word for marriage is kiddushin, consecration, sanctification. A male consecrates his wife by placing a ring on her finger in the presence of a minyan, 10 males above the age of 13, pronouncing the sacred text formulated by our sages: "You are hereby consecrated to me with this ring according to the laws of Moses and Israel. The rabbi presiding over this consecration, this betrothal, pronounces two blessings, one over a cup of wine and one stating that we are fulfilling God's commandment of marriage, concluding with the words, Mikadesh Amo Yisrael al Yidei Chupa v'Kiddushin, who sanctifies his people Israel through the marriage canopy and consecration. The ceremony is performed under a chuppah, a canopy, and is followed by a dinner celebration. If a Jewish male and female were married secularly by a justice of the peace, they are recognized as married, since this is a legal union of male and female. They can always have this sacred marriage ceremony performed later. A marriage, quote-unquote, marriage between male and male or female and female can never and will never be recognized as a marriage by authentic Judaism. Marriage between a man and a woman is also true for all major religious and cultural traditions. It's not simply a religious tradition, but also a human tradition and institution. It is rooted in our humanity. Failure to honor marriage between a man and a woman will imperil society. Finally, I have concerns with what the consequences of legally redefining marriage will mean for the well-being of our children, what will be taught in our state schools, and how it will impact religious freedoms. If marriage is redefined by the state will then begin imposing its will on all persons in society, including religious persons and institutions. I urge you to support this legislation and allow the people of Minnesota to vote on this marriage amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Senator Limmer.
Thank you. Next, Bob Battle is invited to come to the table from St. Paul, Berean Church.
Welcome, Reverend Battle. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, the rest of the committee. My name is Bob Battle, and I'm the pastor of the Berean Church, actually just across the street. I also chaired the St. Paul Human Rights Commission for over 9 years. I am presently on the United States Human Civil Rights Commission, and I started working in civil rights in 1954 in Mississippi. I have worked hard to make sure that all Americans have their civil rights, and I don't think it has anything to do with same-sex marriage. I believe that same-sex marriage is against biblical teaching. I also believe that this matter is not a civil rights issue. My dad was pastor also in the Church of God in Christ, and he passed away in 1958 in Mississippi, having never been able to vote because of his civil rights. While the Bible is against same-sex marriage, the same Bible instructs us all to love everyone regardless of their sexual preference. Now I would like to read a portion of our national church proclamation that was sent out in 2004. And it reads like this. We, the presiding bishop, the general board, and the board of bishops of the Church of God in Christ, solemnly proclaim that the institution of marriage was established and ordained by God. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Therefore, God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. He created the woman for the man. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 9. Therefore, marriage is honorable. Hebrew chapter 13, verse 4. We believe that since the beginning of recorded history, in most cultures of the world, marriage has been defined as the lawful union of one man and one woman. The traditional form of marriage is one of the bedrock institutions of most societies. We therefore affirm the preservation of the present definition of marriage as being the legal union of one man and one woman as husband and wife. I support this amendment to have the voters determine what marriage is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Reverend Battle. Senator Limerick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to invite Pastor Sergio Choi to the table from the Ministerio Maranatha in the city of Bloomington.
Pastor Choi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name, pull the microphone nice and close, and proceed.
Hola, mi nombre es Sergio Choi. Yo estoy aquí para apoyar que la gente pueda votar en el voto del matrimonio. In case you didn't catch that, my name is Sergio Choi, and I'm here to testify to support the allowing the people to vote on the marriage amendment. Excuse me. Along with my wife, we pastor the first Spanish-speaking Christian non-denominational church in the city of Bloomington. We were established 11 years ago, and with the rapid growth of the Hispanic community, we are establishing a presence in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota. We are a Hispanic congregation who welcomes everyone seeking a relationship with God. I was born in Guatemala, raised in California and Hawaii, but have lived in Minnesota most of my life. And I have seen the social and demographic changes in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota. I consider myself a Minnesotan. I was married here, my children are born in Minneapolis, and everything dear to me is here in Minnesota. I often visit other states and sometimes other countries, and there's something about Minnesota that makes me not want to move anywhere else. The reason I begin with this is because this is a common feeling among Hispanics living in Minnesota. I stand here before you as a Latino family man who is also a pastor in the community. As Latinos, we were raised to strongly believe in family, mom, dad, brothers, and sisters. We grew up believing that our aging parents do not belong in a nursing home, but rather live with us until the day we say goodbye. We grow up believing that children don't necessarily have to leave the house when they turn 18, but they may leave the home when they get married. We believe in family gatherings where grandma cooks a traditional meal and grandpa tells us old stories from his youth. We are raised by our dads to be hard workers and to love our and the love of our mothers taught us to be sensitive to the opposite sex. Marriage between a man and a woman is the foundation of family that makes us Latinos who we are. It is one mother and one father, one man and one woman who make up the foundation of the family. You see, I could talk your ear off with my theological reasons why I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. But I'm here as a person who happens to be Hispanic or Latino living in a wonderful state called Minnesota. When you ask me why I believe in marriage to be between a man and a woman, my answer would not be based on lack of love for gays or lesbians, for I understand there are gay and lesbian Latinos as well. I would not be able to call myself a Christian if hate was the basis of my disagreement. I believe in marriage between a man and a woman because of my children. The values I received from my grandparents, parents, aunts, and uncles all lay on the foundation of marriage between one man and one woman. If it wasn't for one man and one woman many years ago, I wouldn't be here today. My children would not be here today. You see, marriage is not just a commitment between two people who love each other, but rather a commitment between one man and one woman. This is the main ingredient of the marriage covenant. You could not call it marriage if it did not involve one man and one woman who commit to love each other in every and all stages of life until death. To this day, it inspires me to see my 93-year-old grandfather hug and kiss my 90-year-old grandmother. They cannot spend one day apart from each other. To redefine marriage is like trying to redefine water. Water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, as we most know. Water is one of life's essential on this planet. If we redefine water in the state of Minnesota and made it H2H or O2O, we would not have water, and everyone would eventually die. We could call it water, being H2H or O2O, but we'd only be lying to ourselves. Water is made up of H2O. Marriage is between one man and one woman. If we allow ourselves to change something as natural as water, we will eventually disappear. Instead of trying to redefine marriage, let us restore it to be more honorable in our communities. Let us restore it in our children's minds to be something of great honor. Let us not tell our boys that marriage is the end of his life, but rather the beginning of it. Let us tell our daughters that marriage is the place where they will be free to be themselves, the place where they will be protected and loved while having the privilege of bearing our grandchildren. I urge you to allow the people of Minnesota, including the growing Latino community in Minnesota, to vote on this marriage amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Troy. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Austin Nimix from the Alliance Defense Fund.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nimix. If you would please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Austin Nimix. I hold the title of Senior Legal Counsel with the Alliance Defense Fund. We are a national legal alliance. We litigate cases across the country involving religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and marriage and the family. And I thank the thank Senator Limmer for the invitation to address you this afternoon. Mr. Chairman, as debates rage these days regarding budget deficits and jobs, I am pleased that this body is taking some time to discuss the jobs of father and mother, arguably the two most important jobs in our society. This particular legislation places before the Minnesota voters significant questions on marriage and the roles of mothers and fathers in our society. These questions include, among others, what is marriage, and a query that is oftentimes overlooked in these debates, why is government in the marriage business to begin with? It is noteworthy that the topic at hand is not a mere law or creature of statute, but a social institution that has universally crossed all political, religious, sociological, geographical, and historical lines. It is rooted in human nature and not the exclusive product or province of any one segment of society. As put by the famous philosopher Bertrand Russell, a self-described atheist, quote, "But for children, there would be no need of any institution concerned with sex. It is through children alone that sexual relations become of importance to society and worthy to be taken cognizance of by a legal institution." Mr. Chairman, marriage doesn't prescribe conduct or prevent individuals from living how they want to live. It doesn't prohibit intimate relationships or curtail one's constitutional rights. But by specifically licensing marriage and providing taxpayer dollars to incentivize its usage as an enduring social institution, the state of Minnesota attaches mothers and fathers to their children and to one another, providing the best known and documented environment for the rearing of our next generation. This is the primary reason that government is in the marriage business. Were this government interested in every type of adult relationship, mere friendships or romantic acquaintances might be licensed or regulated, yet they are not. Government focuses the licensing of adult relationships on one particular kind because the product of those relationships, children, is too important to ignore and invaluable to our future. Mr. Chairman, to be sure, in various times and places, marriage has served other societal purposes in addition to responsible procreation. And no doubt individuals marry for a multitude of private reasons, as they always have. But the discussion today is not about the private reasons why individuals marry or why any two people should or should not marry. Today we're talking about social policy and only the government's interest in the institution of marriage. Because the government's interest in the institution is unique, interest to marriage has never been conditioned on a couple's actual ability to desire to find happiness together, their level of financial entanglement, or their actual personal dedication to each other. Rather, marriage laws stem from the fact that children are the product of sexual relationships between the men and women that produce the next generation. Only responsible procreation explains the government's interest in the marital institution. Mr. Chairman, in 1967, the Supreme Court of the United States decided the case of Loving against Virginia, striking down a race-based law in the state of Virginia. The law prescribed whites from marrying anyone of color. In so ruling, the Supreme Court called marriage, quote, "fundamental to our very existence and survival," unquote, discussing the timeless and procreative aspects of the institution. Yet those who hold a different view of marriage oftentimes cite the Loving case as somehow supportive of their arguments, overlooking the clear link between marriage and procreation, as discussed by the Supreme Court. They also overlook the fact that just 5 years later, the same Supreme Court decided the case of Baker against Nelson. This is a case that came from the state of Minnesota, where the Minnesota Supreme Court rejected claims for same-sex marriage. In discussing the claims for same-sex marriage, the Minnesota Supreme Court decided, quote, "In common sense and in constitutional sense, there is a clear distinction between marital restriction based merely on race and one based on the fundamental difference in sex," unquote. The United States Supreme Court upheld this decision by the Minnesota Supreme Court, which also emphasized the defining link between marriage and the procreation and rearing of children. Not one single justice of the United States Supreme Court found the claims for same-sex marriage compelling enough to even warrant a review. Interestingly, just last month, this decision was upheld by a district court judge in Hennepin County, of yet another one of the continuing demands placed upon Minnesota and this nation's court to redefine marriage. The next Minnesota court challenged with this demand may not demonstrate the same level of judicial restraint. Since the Baker case, every appellate court in this country, both state and federal, that has addressed the validity of marriage as one man and one woman under the U.S. Constitution has upheld the institution as rationally related to the state's interest in responsible procreation and child rearing. And Mr. Chairman, while some may argue that times have changed, no one can argue credibly that we as a gendered species and humanity have changed. Men and women still compose the two great halves of humanity. Men and women are still wonderfully and uniquely different, and men and women still play important and irreplaceable roles in the family. As stated by the United States Supreme Court, quote, "The truth is that the two sexes are not fungible. A community made up exclusively of one is different from a community composed of both. The subtle interplay of influence on one on the other is among the imponderables," unquote. Mr. Chairman, yet for all the arguments that you could hear in favor of preserving the institution of marriage, and for all the arguments you could hear for its radical redefinition, the legislation before this committee does not require a decision on what definition of marriage is best for Minnesota. Rather, the decision presented to you is quite simple. Will you allow the people of Minnesota to vote, as has happened in 31 other states? Will you allow both sides to express their viewpoints, and not just within the limited confines of a committee hearing in late April, but in a truly statewide fashion, where our public debates are supposed to be had on our televisions, in our newspapers, and in our living rooms? As you know, there is great public interest in this topic, and for good reason, Mr. Chairman. When we see, as we have, that this is not a question about revolved around private bedroom activity or victimless activity, but something that affects us all, it is quite understandable that so many have opinions. Redefining marriage brings with it real consequences for religious liberties, education, and professionals. This is why it must be safeguarded. Where same-sex relationships have been afforded legal establishment, religious groups have been persecuted for refusing to make their facilities available for ceremonies that conflict with their core religious tenets. Religious establishments like Catholic Charities in Boston and Washington, D.C., long known for the good and charitable work that they have done, were forced out. Once same-sex marriage appeared in those communities, no longer was there room for the church to fulfill its important mission. In Massachusetts, where the law requires that parents be notified before their children are educated about homosexual behavior, the officials charged with enforcing the law have refused to so do. In New Mexico, a wedding photographer was fined $6,600 for respectfully refusing to lend her artistic ability to photograph a same-sex ceremony. And although the same-sex couple in question successfully found a photographer to assist them, they nonetheless pursued a complaint against the photographer who refused. Fertility doctors in California were persecuted for their policy that would refuse to enable their reproductive talents to yield a child without a mother and a father. Never mind that the same-sex couple in question found doctors to help them and yielded three healthy children. The neo-political orthodoxy in California, resulting from the redefinition of marriage, found no room for licensed physicians who believed that children need both a mother and a father. And unfortunately, Minnesota has not been unscathed by the fervor of those who are intolerant of us who believe that children need both a mother and a father. Dr. Michael Campion, one of the finest police psychologists in the country, had his contract with the Minneapolis Police Department inexplicably terminated when an organization promoting same-sex marriage in Minnesota discovered that Dr. Campion was previously affiliated with an organization that believes in marriage. Never mind that Dr. Campion was protecting you and your neighbors by ensuring that those commissioned as police officers in the Twin Cities were psychologically fit to perform their duty. Never mind that an outside firm hired by the department to review Dr. Campion's work found that his practices were among the best in the industry and showed absolutely no signs of deficiencies. Never mind that the firm chosen by Minneapolis to replace Dr. Campion lacked any experience screening police officers and had to ask Dr. Campion for assistance in how to do their new job. Apparently, Dr. Campion's prior affiliations were so toxic to the Minneapolis Police Department that they sacrificed the safety of its citizens in order to ease the type of political intolerance that I have outlined herein. This is just the beginning. Were there more time, Mr. Chairman, I could share with you more stories which show why same-sex marriage is not a live-and-let-live proposition and why so many Minnesotans want to vote on this very important issue. Without question, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, I believe that the overwhelming majority of people on both sides of this debate are good and decent Minnesotans, coming from all walks of life, political parties, races, and creeds. They want nothing more than what is best for their marriages, their children, and their state. By giving them the right to vote, you respect their opinions. There are some who may argue to you, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, that you, the legislators of the state of Minnesota, are charged with making the laws, not the people. But we're not talking about making a mere statute. We're talking about a constitutional amendment, and the Constitution is the people's document, and they are entitled to change it. And to be sure, the topic at hand, Mr. Chairman, is not something with which the citizens require the assistance of the legislature. We're talking about marriage. Marriage is the people's institution. They know it, and they live it every day of their lives. As the experts on marriage, the people should be the ones to make the final call. The people are demanding the right to vote, Mr. Chairman. By passing the bill before you, you provide just that, and only that, a right to vote for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Nimux.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes our proponent testimony. I'll invite the opponents to come to the table. I'll move aside for their hour. We did not use up our hour, but we will waive the balance of time. And the opposition has been promised 1 hour, and I expect them to get that.
Very well. Thank you, Senator Limmer. The first testifier that I have as an opponent is Ms. Cantor Roth. Would you please come to the testifying table? And I will tell you that we will cease taking testimony at 2:13. Ms. Cantor Roth, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I have a brief handout here if the page would like to come and get it. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. For the record, my name is Ann Cantor Roth, and I'm the executive director of Project 515, an organization that works to achieve full rights and consideration under law for same-sex couples and their families. Currently in Minnesota, thousands of families are treated unequally by Minnesota law. There are at least 515 instances in which Minnesota's same-sex couples and their families are treated differently than their family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, and members of their faith communities. That is because the state grants rights and responsibilities based on the legal definition of marriage. These rights and responsibilities impact families in all parts of life: business, farming, military, insurance, and families' ability to provide for each other. In little ways also, such as hunting and fishing license.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
There's some folks having a hard time hearing you. If you would pull the mic real close.
Sir.
The acoustics in this room aren't all that good.
Is that better?
That's very much
very
better.
Good.
Thank you.
And worst of all, at the end of life and even after life. Minnesota law also currently prohibits same-sex marriage. As a result, we are telling certain Minnesotans that they are less deserving of being treated equally under the law. Unequal treatment under the law is hurtful and damages all Minnesota families, not just the same-sex couples and their families that this constitutional amendment and many of its advocates are targeting. I want to tell you a short story to illustrate one of the many reasons this issue is important to me. I happen to be straight and married to a man with 3 children of ours. My closest friend's name is Michael, and he is gay. Our lives have been intertwined and have run parallel for about 25 years. We now live in the same Minneapolis neighborhood. He's an upstanding resident. He leads a faith community in Minneapolis. We both have male partners who take a very active role with our children. We both have responsibility for taking care of our families, working at careers that contribute to society, and a myriad of responsibilities. However, many of the benefits and responsibilities needed to live out the obligations that my family enjoys aren't available to his family. Michael's family also has greater risks and greater costs just to try to protect themselves, raise their family, and contribute to the strength of our state. Preserving and making permanent all of these disparities by pursuing a constitutional amendment will take this state and its families in the wrong direction. And I ask that you vote no on the constitutional amendment proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Kanner Roth. The next testifier that we have is Monica Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Meyer, please state your full name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today against Senate Files 1307, 1308, and 1309. I am Monica Meyer, and I'm the Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota. Outfront Minnesota works to make our state safe and equitable for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Minnesotans. We work with tens of thousands of Minnesotans across the state who want Minnesota to be a state that celebrates all people and families. They believe in a Minnesota where people no longer fear discrimination, harassment, isolation, or violence because of who they are and who they love. I'm also here today as a lifelong Minnesotan who joins thousands of other Minnesotans who, despite the sun, woke up this morning with heavy hearts. We implore you to vote against this amendment today. This bill, if it moves forward, will send our state into a divisive and polarizing political battle that at the end of the day will help not one family do better. It will ask voters to decide if the discrimination some families face should be enshrined in our Constitution. Our Constitution should not be used as a vehicle to permanently establish second-class citizenship for some Minnesotans. We look to this legislature for the leadership to inspire the best in people and to ask Minnesotans to unite and to work hard to make our state vibrant and strong. We want a Minnesota we can believe in, one that unites and celebrates unity. Please vote against this amendment, and thanks so much.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. The next testifier that I have is Jean Bowman from St. Paul. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
please
of the
pull the mic nice and close. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jane Bowman. I'm an attorney licensed to practice here in the state of Minnesota. From a legal perspective, a constitutional amendment defining marriage as between one man and one woman is redundant and unnecessary. We already have two state statutes prohibiting same-sex marriage. Our family laws define marriage, and the DOMA statute defines marriage. These laws also specifically refuse to recognize same-sex marriages from other jurisdictions. As previously mentioned, we also have a Minnesota Supreme Court case that prohibits same-sex marriage based upon Minnesota's existing state law. In addition, we have federal laws that prohibit same-sex marriage, and those laws, of course, apply here in Minnesota. Minnesota is unique in that we already have an extensive, three-layered, multi-pronged legal history that prohibits same-sex marriage. The witnesses here today discussed a scenario that does not exist today. The discussion that we're having here today is a distraction from the important budget work that you should be doing right now. There were arguments raised about, quote-unquote, judicial activists or judicial activism. This argument was already put to the test in a case that was brought last year in Hennepin County. A Hennepin County judge ruled and solidly rejected that any claim to marriage by same-sex couples based upon existing laws are not prohibited. That decision also relied upon the previous Supreme Court decision. At the time the case was filed, Mr. Jordan Lawrence of the Alliance Defense Fund that previously spoke today about this decision, correctly predicted that the case had no chance of moving forward because of Minnesota's strong legal precedents here that ban same-sex marriage. Minnesota's judges respect the law and they honor precedent. Judicial activism is also a distraction from the issues that this legislature should be discussing today. There's been discussion here about letting the people vote. In the past 12 years, 304 bills have been introduced to change the Constitution. 304 bills have been introduced, and only three have made it through. This legislative body makes policy, and it does not allow the rights of minorities to be put to the vote by the majority. There was also discussions here today about religious freedoms and about cases that would be brought against religious leaders. The bottom line is that no religious institution will ever be required to change their doctrine, and no religious leader will be required to officiate at any same-sex union. And in no case has ever been filed against a religious person or institution because of same-sex marriage. A fear that religious doctrine has to change is unfounded. In addition, all of the cases that were discussed previously, the case about the photographer and the case about other religious leaders, all of those cases were based on anti-discrimination laws. None of those cases were based on marriage laws, and they certainly weren't based on any constitutional amendment that defines marriage as between one man and one woman, and to imply otherwise is to confuse the issue. I do have a question for Senator Limmer with regards to the scope of the amendment.
Ms. Bowman, you will be able to pose your question, but I will not allow a response given the fact that all we are doing during this period of time is to elicit testimony. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and especially Senator Limmer. There's plenty of time to answer this question after this hearing today. With regards to the scope of this amendment, do you believe that this amendment would permit the state legislature to create any legal protections for same-sex couples up to and including civil unions for same-sex couples that would give them all the rights and benefits of marriage while leaving marriage to opposite-sex couples? That's a question that deserves an answer at some point. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, same-sex marriage does not exist here in Minnesota. Legal precedent prohibits it, as does our Supreme Court. And to state otherwise is a distraction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. The next testifier I have is Dr. Paul Melker, who is, I believe, at the table. Welcome, Dr. Melker. Please pull the mic nice and close. State your name and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Dr. Paul Melkert. I'm a pediatrician in Minneapolis. I work in a clinic that prides itself in the diversity of the families that we care for every day and diversity of the medical issues that they face. I grew up in Chaska. I was educated at St. Olaf College, went to University of Minnesota for my medical degree and also for my pediatric residency. My family and I live in South Minneapolis. I'm a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is a national organization of more than 60,000 pediatricians who are committed to the attainment of optimal physical, mental, and social health and well-being of all infants, children, adolescents, and young adults. The marriage amendment that you are considering for the Minnesota Constitution would have a detrimental impact on maintaining healthy families in our state. The proposed marriage amendment is discriminatory, divisive, and harmful to many children and families. Civil marriage should be a social institution that promotes healthy families, regardless of whether they are headed by same or opposite gendered partners. It confers a powerful set of rights, benefits, and protections that cannot be obtained by any other means. Enactment of the marriage amendment prohibits these legal and financial rights, benefits, and protections and would greatly threaten children's access to basic health insurance and health services. There is substantial evidence supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Practitioners and Physicians, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychoanalytical Association, the National Association of Social Workers, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the American Medical Association, all show that children raised by same-gender parents fare just as well in all areas as those raised by heterosexual parents. The only recognizable difference in these studies is that children raised by same-sex parents are more nurturing towards younger children and demonstrate a higher level of tolerance for diversity. However, these same-gender families have no legal protections. There are serious legal, financial, and social ramifications for same-gender couples and their children resulting from initiatives to prohibit civil marriage. Parenting by same-gender couples is an established, valued, and growing part of the diverse structure of the families here in Minnesota and the United States. Nationally, there are between 8 and 10 million children raised in gay and lesbian partnered households. Same-gendered couples live in 99% of all U.S. counties. In the Midwest, 35% of lesbian couples and 22% of gay male couples are raising children. It is important to understand the context in which this amendment is being considered. Harassment of gay and lesbian people, especially young people, is too common. Children are watching how we as adults relate to one another. Children learn from us as we demonstrate respect, tolerance, equality, and understanding. They also learn from us when we disrespect one another. This amendment contributes to that disrespect. The impact of such an amendment threatens the legal, financial, and psychosocial welfare of the children born to or adopted by same-gender partners who love them and want to assume responsibility for their welfare. Minnesota has a wonderful tradition of inclusion, tolerance, and support for one another. Let's continue to build on these strong traditions. The proposed marriage amendment strengthens no families. Rather than creating an amendment for the sole purpose of discriminating against a group of people, we should instead be focusing on legislation that truly strengthens and supports all families, including improving health care and education. Mr. Chairman and members, the American Academy of Pediatrics has identified the strong link between health and well-being of children, the support and encouragement of all parents, and the protection of strong family relationships. I would like to emphasize the importance of opposing efforts to amend the Constitution to ban marriage and other legal protections for same-sex couples. Conscientious, loving, and nurturing adults, whether they're men or women, homosexual or heterosexual, are amazing parents. The rights, benefits, and protections for all can further strengthen every family. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Melkert. The next testifier that I have is Mr. Bruce Ozzie. Please excuse me if I mispronounced your name. Please have a seat at the table. Welcome to the committee. Pull the microphone nice and close. State your name and proceed with your testimony, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bruce Ozzie, and I would like to thank you for this opportunity to testify today. I am a husband, a father, a grandfather, a retired educator, and along with my wife, Kathy, are 17-year members of Red Wing Chapter of PFLAG, parents, friends, and families of lesbians and gays. I'm also a proud Minnesotan. What makes me proud? First, I come from a family of educators in which my grandmother, father, mother, sister, brother were teachers as well as administrators. I'm proud that Minnesotans place high value on education. Second, I'm proud to live in a state in which a large majority of its citizens recognize the rich diversity and abundance of our natural as well as our human resources that we have been blessed with and are willing to respect and care for them. Third, I am proud to live in a state that is known across the country for how we respect and treat one another. We are all familiar with the saying, Minnesota nice. For 65 of my 67 years, I have called Minnesota my home. I can't imagine living anywhere else. For the past 40 years, Kathy and I have lived and raised our family in a wonderful community of Red Wing. Our children received a first-class education that included special and lasting opportunities in and out of school. By being at the epicenter of Minnesota's natural beauty my 30-year career as a director and instructor at the Red Wing Environmental Learning Center was a dream come true. However, Kathy and I treasure most about raising our family in this community was the pride of building up and supporting one another in our community. This is the support through whether it would be trials or tribulations. That is why this proposed amendment is so painful to our family. The hallmark of this legislation is not one of building up and supporting each other, but one of dividing and conquering. Like all families, we have faced and overcome difficult challenges in our life. In a matter of 2 days, in September of 1992, I learned that my wife was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer, and my younger gay brother was diagnosed with full-blown AIDS. Fortunately, with advanced medical treatments, a strong determination, and love and support from family, friends, and our community, Kathy prevailed in her battle. On the other hand, an AIDS diagnosis in 1992 was a death sentence. John lived just 2 years, and he begged us not to tell anyone. Not to tell anybody about his illness or even the fact that he was gay. He feared losing his respect that he had in the community, and also he feared losing his teaching position that he had for 20 years as a high school social studies teacher in Buffalo, Minnesota. That was a decision he would later regret. After all, how was John to know in the early 90s that in the small conservative community in Wright County, that unconditional love towards a gay man was alive and well? When word finally got out about his illness, the last 2 months of his life found a contingent of various people commuting 100 miles every single day to be at his side at the hospital and nursing home where he eventually died at age 43. After his death, the community of Buffalo filled a large church in downtown Minneapolis to standing room only to honor the memory of their teacher, their mentor, and their friend. They named a street in front of the school after a homosexual, and they raised $30,000 of memorials to establish a scholarship for a graduating senior to attend college in his memory. To this day, I firmly believe that John's life and death, along with the outpouring of unconditional love from his community, has, in a small way, been a catalyst to help fair-minded Minnesotans become more understanding and accepting of their fellow citizens. Kathy and I have 3 wonderful daughters and 3 precious grandchildren. One of our daughters just happens to be a lesbian. She would be the first to tell you that she didn't choose that sexual orientation any more than I chose to be heterosexual. Angie is in a long-term committed relationship with a wonderful partner, Cassidy. They both are successful and highly respected in their chosen profession. Angie is a professional golf instructor and is certified by both the PGA and the LPGA. Cassidy has chosen a career in corporate management. There is more you should know about these 2 exceptional women. They are extremely compassionate towards and respectful of others. They are also proud, loving, and dedicated parents of a 20-month-year-old son. I frequently hear that marriage amendment is needed to support and protect families. I ask you today, why isn't my daughter's family worthy of support? And how about my family? If this amendment passes, how will I explain to my grandson that in the eyes of Minnesota, his family is worthless? Simply stated, why should his family be nothing more than chaff in a heterosexual kingdom? In April 2010, Kathy and I attended Lobby Day, sponsored by Outfront Minnesota, that we have done for many years. At this event, we had the opportunity to visit with our legislators. We also had the opportunity to visit with a legislator from an adjoining district who happens to be a staunch supporter of this legislation. When I proudly shared with him a photo of my grandson and his two moms, his only response that he felt so sorry for this young boy being raised without a father. I responded by asking him if he would be so kind as to explain his position to our second daughter, who lost her husband in a 10-week battle against cancer at the age of 32. This normally boisterous legislator, who hardly ever has a problem coming up with words, was speechless. And by the way, our granddaughter celebrated her first birthday 1 week after her daddy's funeral. We are so proud of our daughter raising her daughter these past 11 years as a single mom. How has she done it? She will tell you that it's been hard work, sacrifice, and the love and support from many caring people. I would like to close my testimony with a question and a simple request. In a world and a state screaming for help on so many concerns from food shortages, homelessness, foreclosures, crime-ridden neighborhoods, environmental degradation, and affordable health care, just to name a few, why is it so imperative to pursue legislation that will drain valuable resources from both sides of the issue? We all know the results. If this amendment is put on the ballot in 2012, the results will be painful divisions within families, within friendships, within neighborhoods and communities, and this great state. Minnesota is better than that. I ask you, as our state leaders, to demonstrate your vision and your leadership that will treat all Minnesotans equally under our state constitution. Please vote against this divisive amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ozzie. I will indicate to the balance of the testifiers that we have now used up approximately one half of our time, and there are two-thirds of the testifiers remaining. So I would ask that you be respectful, because at the rate we are going, the last five testifiers will not have an opportunity to testify. The next testifier we have is Mr. Jeff Wilford. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Wilford. My wife and I and our children are lifelong Minnesotans. My mother's lineage dates back to pre-revolutionary times. February 27th of 2011, our soldier son was killed by an IED blast just west of Kandahar. So here I am, sitting before a Minnesota Senate Judiciary Committee, just 8 weeks later on behalf of my son and the minority community of which he was a part. On the battlefield, both hetero and homosexuals bleed red. They all serve this nation regardless of sexuality. Our son's limbless, shrapnel-peppered torso bled out on Afghani soil. I cannot imagine what those last moments of life must have been for him. He was bagged and carried from the field by his fellow soldiers, and I know for a fact his sexuality did not matter one whit to them. He was an excellent soldier, the company guidon bearer. He was the company sniper, the company reconnaissance man, and his fellow soldiers are still grieving his loss. If you want proof, I'll show you letters from Afghanistan. Had he lived and returned here, look what he would find. a bill proposal to modify the Constitution of this state, denying a minority the right to choose a marriage partner of the same sex. For this minority, there is to be no option to check married filing jointly on the tax form, but their tax dollars will be readily accepted by this state. I am at a loss for words on how to appeal to your humanity, a loss for words on how to open your hearts to the notion that maybe, just maybe, same-sex unions will not ruin this country, just as women getting a right to vote did not ruin this country. Yet this soldier laid down his life on behalf of all, the proponents and the opponents. He laid his life down for this Constitution. Same-sex marriage is already illegal. How much more injurious can you be to this minority? How much more insulting now to use the Constitution meant to secure rights as a means to deny rights? If you pass this bill, the phrase red-blooded American will become just a hollow statement, because some of the red-blooded will not have been endowed with inalienable rights by their creator under this modified Constitution. Soldiers are dying. People need jobs, and I truly ask, what is the subtext of this bill to amend our Constitution really about? Please vote with dignity for all human life. We are all children of the Creator and endowed under law with the same inalienable rights. Were this soldier alive today, he would say to you, work it out in the legal system. It is not a constitutional matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilford. Next testifier that I have is Mr. David Patton. Please state your name and proceed.
I'm David Patton. There's been a lot of talk today about the children who are raised by same-sex couples, and as a man who was raised by two men, I'm here to tell you we're doing just fine. I'm a law student at the University of Minnesota in my first year. My dads met at a piano bar called Friends on April 24th, 1983. They celebrate April 24th as their anniversary because they don't have a wedding date to celebrate. They would have celebrated their 28th anniversary this year, except that my dad, much like men throughout history, forgot his anniversary. They raised me. My dad and George, they introduced me to the arts, they took me to museums, they took me on vacation, they taught me how to cook. Everything that I know, or much of what I know about being a good husband and hopefully a good father, I learned from them. There's three of us, my brother and my stepbrother. All of us are married, they each have kids, and I just found out that my wife is pregnant. 5 weeks. It breaks my heart to think that if my baby is gay, he or she will not be allowed to have a wedding day. He or she will not be allowed to have a family in the same way that I and my wife can. My wedding day is the happiest day of my life to this point. And it's an amendment about denying that to my child, potentially. Legislators, I call upon you to do your job. Protect the rights of the minority. And if you truly feel that this is an issue that we should put to the people to choose, then rather than this redundant and hollow choice that you're putting in front of us to reaffirm the status quo, put an amendment on the ballot that will allow us change. If we want to put it to the people, give the people an actual choice. I oppose this amendment, and I beg you to oppose it. I don't want my wife to bear a child into a state where we have constitutionalized prejudice against my child's granddads. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. The next testifier I have is Ms. Helen Palmer.
Good
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Palmer.
Thank you very much.
Please pull the mic nice and close, state your name, and proceed.
Sure. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Helen Palmer, and I'm immediate past president of the League of Women Voters in Minnesota. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak today regarding Senate files. I guess there are three, 1307, 8, and 9. The League of Women Voters in Minnesota believes that this bill, which proposes an amendment to the Minnesota Constitution on same-sex marriage, amounts to an assault on a minority group. While the League of Women Voters has no position on marriage, we do have a strong position in support of equal opportunity in public services for all people. The proposed amendment will prevent same-sex partners from having the many rights, protections, and benefits conferred by marriage. Furthermore, we believe that this highly divisive amendment is dangerous and unnecessary. It is dangerous because it sets apart a minority group and specifically denies to them the civil rights of the majority. In fact, this proposal is of special concern because it would turn constitutional history on its head by requiring Minnesota to restrict rather than guarantee the civil rights of a portion of its citizens. The proposed amendment is unnecessary because the state Supreme Court ruled unanimously in 1971 that there is no right to same-sex marriage contained in the state constitution. And although the League of Women Voters does not agree with that action, the legislature has already acted to make same-sex marriage illegal in Minnesota. The fundamental rights of any minority should not be subject to the vagaries of the majority. This is a representative democracy, and in this representative democracy, we expect our elected officials to make informed decisions and to safeguard the civil rights of all our citizens. The Minnesota Constitution is a remarkable document. It is about rights and liberties, and its spirit is honorable and generous. Alterations to it should be rare and deeply considered, and made with the good of all the people in mind. The amendment proposed in these bills, 1307, 8, and 9, does not belong in our Constitution, and the League of Women Voters of Minnesota urges you to reject it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. Next testifier I have is Ms. Jessie Kingston.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. I want you to pull the mic nice and close, state your name, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, for hearing me this afternoon. My name is Jessie Kingston, and I was born and raised in Minnesota, and I currently reside in the city of Edina. I come from a very diverse family in which all of my brothers and sisters and I are adopted. I have a brother who has cerebral palsy, one who is Latino, a sister who is African-American, just like myself. And my parents' ethnic background include French-Canadian, Czechoslovakian, Scandinavian, and Scot-Irish, just to name a few. We also have varying religious beliefs, including both Christianity and Judaism. Our diversity has made us a stronger family because it taught us that a family's love isn't about looking alike or having a biological bond. A family's love is one that in which everyone is committed to each other and is actively involved in each other's lives. It is important for us to remember that no two people are alike. We are all different. We should learn from each other and not let those differences tear us apart. As Minnesotans, we have historically been known as a state that has embraced diversity, focused on basic human rights, and emphasized the importance of the community. Supporting same-gender marriage is a basic human right that we should not be denying. We are an inclusive society, and we cannot afford to become divisive. Edina used to be known as sort of a conservative city. At one time, Edina had living restrictions in the Country Club District that prohibited housing ownership by African American, Jews, and other ethnic minorities. As both an African American and a Jew, I would not have been allowed to live in Edina. Edina, however, is changing, and today is welcoming all families. Not only are the living restrictions no longer in place, last year, Edina passed a domestic partnership ordinance. Today, same and opposite gender couples who are residents or employees of Edina have the opportunity to register their relationship with the city and use that legal document to access domestic partnership benefits and to be involved in the care of their loved one or of a child in a hospital. This ordinance also recognizes same-gender and opposite-gender domestic partners as families in city-owned facilities, such as the Edina Pool. Before the passage of the Domestic Partnership Ordinance, a family membership included opposite-gender couples, their children, grandparents, and the nanny. However, domestic partners had to purchase a single membership. That is no longer the case. I am proud to be a member of the Edina Human Rights and Relations Commission who made that possible. Following the passage of the Domestic Partnership Ordinance in Edina, five more cities have passed similar ordinances. Minnesota is showing that it believes in creating an inclusive community. We have communities working hard to upholding basic human rights for our families, and that includes marriage equality for all. Now is not the time to be divisive. As a state, we should not be taking steps backwards. A constitutional amendment banning gay marriage does not unify us. It will only divide us. We should be focusing our attention on making people's lives better. We should be uniting people and focusing on better jobs, reducing unemployment, and providing services for those in need. I urge all of you to follow the example of the nine cities in Minnesota in welcoming all families and not support this bill for a constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kingston. Next testifier that I have is Mr. Russ Testa.
That's right.
Please pull the mic close. State your name and proceed, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for having me here today. I have some handouts that I'd like to give out to the committee and other observers if they'd like to take one. My name is Russ Testa. I'm currently the board chair of Project 515. I have over 25 years of corporate experience in human resources. This includes 10 years at Mervyn's, a division of Target Corporation, where my last position was Senior Vice President of Human Resources, and 4 years as a Senior Vice President of Human Resources at Jamba Juice Corporation. As a Human Resources Executive, one of my major responsibilities has been attracting and retaining talented employees. These amendment bills promote inequality and anti-inclusion, which hurts Minnesota businesses' ability to recruit and retain the best talent. And I have an example I'd like to share with you today. A top-ranked college in Minnesota was attempting to hire a senior professor. And out of 120-plus applicants, one particular candidate for the job stood out. His academic reputation and expertise were well known, and he was considered among one of the top 10 professors in the country in his field. A critical question for him was how Minnesota law would recognize his partner and their child. In the end, the professor withdrew his application for the position. As any good father would, he put his family first. Minnesota is already at a disadvantage. Currently, 22 other states or jurisdictions provide at least some legal recognition of domestic partners. The best and brightest have many options. Everyone should feel included and welcomed enough to want to work in Minnesota. Inclusive and engaging business environments drive increased productivity and profits, and I have a few examples for you. The first is from Towers Watson, which states that companies with highly engaged employee populations turned in a significantly better financial performance, specifically a 5.75% difference in operating margin and a 3.44% difference in net profit margin. Gallup states that engaged organizations have 2.6 times the earnings per share growth rate. And according to the Gallup Knight Soul of the Community Report, which is the handout I've just passed out, people's attachment to their community, including how open and welcoming the community is to different types of people, including gay and lesbian citizens, may be a leading factor in economic growth. It is no surprise that employees whose environments are welcoming and inclusive and who are treated equally are more productive and committed to the success of their organizations. Minnesota employers understand this, and they are leading the way towards inclusion and job growth. They understand the positive impact inclusive policies have, including equity for gay and lesbian employees and their families. According to HRC, More than 290 Minnesota employers offer domestic partner benefits, and 70% of Fortune 500 companies based in Minnesota offer inclusive policies. A constitutional amendment that creates permanent disparities between Minnesotans is anti-jobs, anti-business, and anti-family. I urge you to vote against these amendment bills and instead focus on inclusive policies that will help to rebuild our businesses, our economy, and our state. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Testa. Our next testifier is Ms. Madeline Koch.
Yes.
Pull the microphone nice and close. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for having me here today. My name is Madeline Cook. I'm 24 years old. I was born and raised here in Minnesota. I'm a self-identifying Republican, and I'm straight. I'm here today because I'd like to give you my perspective and the perspective of most people I know who are a part of my generation, political party, and sexual orientation on why adding a constitutional amendment that would ban same-sex marriage is not only wrong on a moral front, but also takes our party in the wrong direction for future generations of Republicans. You'd think that as a Republican, I'd be on the other side of this issue. But I'm here today because I don't believe that equal rights for same-sex couples or anyone is a partisan issue. In fact, I'm not in this chair today because of a relationship I've had with a gay brother, sister, friend, or relative. To be honest, before I became a part of this movement 3 years ago, I didn't even have a gay friend. Instead, I'm driven by something else, an ideology, one encouraged by my peers, that tells me that this is not the direction our state or our nation should be headed. In fact, amongst my generation, there's no doubt that equal rights for all Minnesotans is absolutely necessary for the good of our state. In other words, it should not be the focus of efforts to achieve political gain or debate. The need for equality and the full acceptance of GLBT people is something Minnesota's next generation of leaders has already embraced. Public opinion is moving quickly towards full equality, and passage of this bill would lead us astray. Never before has our Constitution sought to treat people unequally. This constitutional amendment will not only set our fight for equality back in time, it will set an agenda that will distract us from the investments in Minnesota that truly matter. So, as a young person who hopes to live here the rest of my life, I ask you to vote no on these policies that will enforce inequality and provide my generation yet another reason to doubt the political process. As a Republican, I ask you not to pass this piece of legislation that will lead future generations of Republicans away from getting Minnesota's priorities back in order and force us to spend valuable time later undoing the mistakes made here today. And finally, as a straight person, not driven by anything but ideology, I'd ask that you not let me down as my representatives by putting your own personal beliefs and benefits in the way of equality. Please vote no on these bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Next testifier that I have is Bishop Craig Johnson. Please state your name and proceed.
I am not Bishop Craig Johnson.
Whoop.
I am David Wongard, who is here to speak on behalf of Bishop Craig Johnson. Bishop Craig Johnson gives you his greetings today. He's not able to be with you, and he has asked me to read a statement to you. Bishop Johnson is Bishop of the Minneapolis Area Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, a synod of 155 congregations and approximately 210,000 baptized. And to you, Bishop Johnson says this. Dear committee, gay and lesbian people are a gift to our church and our state. I am deeply concerned that in a time of almost unprecedented financial crisis, that a bill is brought forth that will certainly divide the citizens of our state and may work to undermine the civil rights of some of our citizens. Instead, let us find ways to live with our differences and to respect all the bound consciousness of our brothers and sisters and to work for justice in our land. Let us concentrate now on finding ways to enhance the civil rights of our citizens. And in this difficult budgetary time, to find ways to care for the most vulnerable in our midst. Sincerely, Bishop Craig Johnson.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Reverend Leanne Watkins. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Leanne Watkins. I'm the priest of St. Mary's Episcopal Church in St. Paul, and I speak today in opposition to this proposed amendment. As a young adult, I discerned a call to the priesthood, a call that I was able to pursue because decades of faithful, persistent people said their prayers and honored their scriptures. They persisted in winning the right for me to follow the call that God had put on my heart. And it is out of gratitude to those people that persistently stood up for me that I will persist in standing up for all of God's children who follow their heart. I stand firmly in my faith tradition as a Minnesota Episcopalian. We have been blessing same-sex unions for a very long time. I am joined today by Methodist and Presbyterian and Lutheran and United Church of Christ and Metropolitan Community Church and United Universalist and Jewish clergy and lay people, a whole lot of us representing the spectrum of mainline traditions. We are people who love God and reverence our holy scriptures and share a firm conviction that all people are created in the image of God. And we have witnessed for ourselves and our own congregations deep, faithful, God-generated love between same-gender loving couples. We see that God-generated love in their children who sit alongside them in our pews, say their prayers, and sing their songs. We bless their families because we believe that God has blessed their families. And if you are thinking, maybe if even only one of you is thinking, that people of faith all think together in one big block, maybe you somehow got the impression that all people of faith would like these proposed changes, then we are here today to help you avoid such a drastic misreading of your constituents. We stand together, clergy and lay people, reaching across our religious distinctions. We are many, we are organized, we are prayerful, we are persistent, and together we're asking you to defeat this amendment. In voting to defeat, you are doing what we elected you to do, working to protect all families, not just some families. So, we'd like to let you go back to getting about your business, your pressing business of pass a budget. And we will go back, your friends, and do our business. We will say our prayers, we will honor our scriptures, and we will celebrate all the ways God's love powerfully comes into our lives and tugs on our hearts. So hear us, please. Defeat this amendment.
Thank you, Reverend Watkins. Next testifier I have is Rabbi Spilker. Please pull the mic close, state your full name, and please proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Limmer, members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing me to testify today and for your patience and indulgence in listening to these inspiring testimonies today. After I introduce myself, I have just 2 points. I am Rabbi Adam Spilker, Rabbi of Mount Zion Temple here in St. Paul on Summit Avenue, a 155-year-old congregation, the oldest Jewish congregation in the Upper Midwest. I cannot speak on behalf of all 700 families in my congregation. I do have a clear sense, however, that the vast majority are opposed to this amendment, but I can speak on behalf of the Minnesota Rabbinic Association, comprised of the rabbis who represent the majority of the Jews in Minnesota. And I was asked to speak on behalf of the JCRC, the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas, whose board has historically voted to oppose this constitutional amendment. And as part of my introduction, I'm proud to say that the first same-sex union that my wife and I had the honor to co-officiate for was 2003. My wife is also a clergy person at Mount Zion Temple. We've been happily married for 19 years, 14 of them working here together at Mount Zion. Point one, 2 weeks ago, right before Passover, the Jewish holiday of freedom and equality, Jews read the same text in synagogues around the world that included Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22. Do not lie with a male as one lies with a woman. When these words were first uttered some 3,000 years ago by my ancestors living in the ancient Near East, Clearly, they made certain sexual acts forbidden. And because my time is short here, I'm going to make this brief and clear. My ancestors did not forbid a loving, committed, same-sex relationship with this verse. Why? Because they had never seen one. Marriage was arranged at a young age, and therefore they outlawed anything that would break up the only marriage that they understood, heterosexual marriage. Today, when many are getting married a little later in life than in the ancient world, in their 30s if they're lucky, many have time to understand their true God-given nature, form committed relationships, the majority of which are heterosexual, the minority of which are homosexual. And this brings me to point two. Alexis de Tocqueville came to America in 1832, warning about the tyranny of the majority. There are clearly faithful religious views on both sides of the issue of marriage. To put morality to an up or down vote is to risk the majority imposing their religious views on the minority. I will defend the right of my fellow clergy in the state to marry or not to marry whomever they choose. This is part of the religious freedom of America, and it should stay in the realm of religion. But in the public square, there needs to be a secular reason to outlaw something. What is that secular reason? A marriage amendment will further divide our state. It is a move in the wrong direction. Wrong for justice, wrong for my belief of God's love and mercy, wrong for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Our final testifier is Pastor Gary Walpole. Welcome to the committee. Please pull the mic close. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to be present and share today. My name is Gary Walpole. I am pastor of Peace United Methodist Church in North Oaks, an inclusive, reconciling congregation within the United Methodist Church. First of all, I want to share that when we read the Bible, we need to understand that we interpret. I don't think any of us would want to say marriage is like the marriage of Jacob, who was the father of many children by four different wives. By the time the Christian scriptures came along, most marriages, although not all, were between a man and a woman. I don't think we would want to, as is stated in the first letter to Timothy, that the male is the legal head of a household, and the wife's rights depend on the husband's legal rights, with her having little to none. I do not think we would want to include in our families the institution of slavery that was easily integrated into the families of the New Testament. I have a wonderful wife. I have two wonderful and very handsome sons. I am thankful for the legal rights that my wife and I have to raise our sons and be a family. When my oldest son was a senior, he came to me and came out to let me know he was gay. After two prolonged relationships with two girls from his high school, he was president of his class, he was president of his student body. He has gone on to school at St. Olaf. It is my hope that this committee will not deny the same rights it gives to myself and my wife, to my gay son. In the United Methodist Church, we have a statement that says sexuality is a gift from God. My son never woke up one morning and decided he was going to be attracted to men rather than women. My son slowly, painfully came to the realization that he was attracted to other men. It is his sexual orientation, not by his choice, but by the way that God created him. Sexual orientation is also a gift from God that we ought to celebrate and protect committed, loving, long-range relationships between two adults, no matter if their sexual orientation is to the opposite sex or their sexual orientation is to the same sex. I hope you will vote this bill down. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor. That completes the list of all of our testifiers, and we will now enter the one-hour phase of questions and comments. I will indicate to the committee that I did receive a note from Bishop Quinn that he will be leaving at 2:30, so if there's any questions that any members have for him, they would have to be addressed prior to that time. With that, I will recognize Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the testifiers for keeping the discussion in a professional and compassionate manner. And this is a good discussion. It's a discussion befitting the state of Minnesota. And keeping it on a professional plane is always the best way to do so. You've heard the bill. You have a copy of the bill before you, and you've heard the testimony. So I will continue to stand for questions or engage in discussion at this time.
Are there any questions from any of the committee members? Mark.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I know a lot of things have changed since 2004, I think it was when we started doing this, but one of the things I noticed in the bill that's changed was in the past, the earlier language had exactly or pretty close to the same language you have now, but also had a line that any other relationship shall not be recognized as a marriage in Minnesota. And I noticed that's not in here now, and I'm just curious, would you be intending this, that if this was added to the Constitution, that other, quote, equivalent relationships, civil unions and other things, would you be intending that those not be allowed, that they not be recognized as a similar thing, just not that word? I mean, is the issue the word, or is the issue that you don't want to have legal relationships recognized?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lemon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, you're right. There has been changes since 2004, and a number of variations of the marriage amendment have been proposed since that time. You even had a change in the marriage law proposal just as early as 8 months ago. But nevertheless, the new language simply defines marriage as solely between one man and one woman. This bill will not prohibit some future legislature to consider a law that would recognize same-sex civil union or any other domestic partnership.
So,
Senator Marty.
So, Mr. Chairman, and in effect, they could be, and I guess the question is it terminology that's the bother? I mean, could we your interpretation of, I'm just asking you as the author, your interpretation of this was, if this was added to the Constitution, we could pass a law that would allow same-sex couple to, whatever we call it, civil union or something, could file jointly on taxes if we chose to do so, and the legislature would not be limited from any of that. Under your intent, if this was to become law, we could do everything except use the term marriage for that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty,
Senator
Limmer. I think a legislature could do that now if they chose. And so, yes, the answer is yes. There would be no – this constitutional amendment, if passed, would not prohibit a future legislature from going in that direction.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, and you referred to the fact that I've introduced legislation a number of times on marriage equality going the opposite way of this, and that would be prohibited by this constitutional amendment, in other words. But it could do the same thing, take out the word marriage, replace it with some other words, and accomplish the same thing, though we'd have to change other laws along with it in order to do that. I'm just trying to find out what your intent is here. So in other words, I could do the same thing, just remove the word marriage and use some other terminology, and I'd still be able to do that, you're saying.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, that would be up to the future legislature to decide of how expansive that role would be.
Any other questions from the committee? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment here. I don't know if I don't think it's been passed out yet. So I haven't seen language. I know what I asked for, but I haven't seen language yet.
Apparently there is, Senator Goodwin, and I'll have it passed out.
Thank you.
Once it's passed out and the members have had an opportunity to take a look at it, we will entertain your amendment.
Okay.
I believe at this time, Senator Goodwin, everyone has a copy of the A1 amendment, I believe.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would expect the author to explain her amendment.
Oh, absolutely. I intend to.
We are going to address it right now. To your amendment, Senator Goodwin.
He was giving me the look that I should make a comment.
Ah, I see. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, I hope you will consider this a friendly amendment. I was listening to what some of the proponents of this legislation were talking about, and several times I heard the words that marriage is sacred and that children deserve stability and so on. And I don't disagree with that. You know, I've been married 41 years, and I think my husband might say 141 years some days. But nevertheless, I'm definitely a believer in marriage and definitely a believer coming from a divorced family that children deserve stability. So in that regard, then, I thought that maybe you would consider this a friendly amendment. I have two different ways to do this if this doesn't work, so I'll ask counsel to help with this. What it would say, the way that it's drafted, is the question would be, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only a union of one man and one woman, and then the words would be inserted, for life, shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Minnesota?
Senator Goodwin, are you at this time offering the A1 amendment?
Pardon me? Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm offering the amendment.
You are offering the A1
amendment.
Okay.
Yes,
Senator,
I'm offering. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm offering the A1 amendment.
Okay. Senator Goodwin, did you have a specific question for counsel, or should we go on to?
Not at this point. I don't know if that works for exact. Well, maybe I do. I don't know if that works exactly for what I'm trying to do here, and that is to say that if we're going to put define marriage in the Constitution, limiting marriage to one man and one woman, and if the concern is that a same-sex couple would create an unstable environment for children and would be wrong, either morally or religiously wrong, then we should be able to say that if marriage is that sacred, then that should be once in your life you get married in this state, once in your life. And that I would expect that the people here that are concerned about the religious aspects of it would certainly think that that was a good idea. Once married, that's it. That's the only chance you get in Minnesota. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, people might say, well, what about abuse or so forth? Well, then separate. There's nothing in here that would prevent you from separating. But certainly it would say that, as some religions say, that you can only marry once. This would basically do the same thing, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin, is that a question for Ms. Pontius?
No, and at this point, because if this, right. But I'm just saying, I've got something else that might work if this is not acceptable.
I'm sorry, I was just trying to understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any further discussion or comments to the A1 amendment?
Ms. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I first read this amendment, I was reading it, one woman for life, and believe me,
that's all you want.
One woman is enough in my life, and I love her dearly. But, Senator Goodwin, would this mean that you're making it illegal for someone to divorce?
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, yes, it would.
And
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, would it mean that if someone was married but living to a wife beater, that this person couldn't divorce that husband?
Senator Goodwin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess it would, except that maybe people would think twice about getting married, for one thing, and another thing, this would not prevent them from separating and not living together. That.
Mr. Maybe. Chair, in light of that,
Senator
I would
Limmer.
Oppose the amendment.
Any further discussion on
Chair.
The A1 amendment?
I'd like a roll call vote on this.
Roll call vote having been requested, there will be a roll call vote. Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
I know that a lot of the members would like to be here to vote. We're missing one member, and I don't know, well, other than the excuse, Senator Scheid, I was wondering if we would like to hold and giving the chance.
We will. I see Senator Youngbauer is absent. We will. We've got a search out for him, and we will pull him in. And then we'll take the vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
You know, I just, to make it perfectly clear, I just would like to actually take 1 second to amend my amendment, if I may.
One moment, Senator Goodwin.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Goodwin, the advice that I'm getting is because we have called the vote, at this point you'd have to withdraw your amendment and withdraw the request for a roll call. I'm sorry. You have to withdraw your request for a roll call. Then you would be able to amend your amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I won't do that, but I can offer one quick oral amendment after this amendment, correct? Okay. Thank you. Then I'll do it that way.
The answer to that, Senator Goodwin, would be yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Are we waiting to collect other members here right now?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
information that I have, Senator Goodwin, at this point. Senator Scheid, of course, has been excused for the day. Senator Jungbauer is in the process of presenting a bill in another committee, and we're waiting for him to come.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Goodwin.
Is he here?
Senator Goodwin, I saw Senator Dibble earlier.
He's not on this committee.
He's not on the committee, no.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, then.
Senator Jungbauer, there is an A1 amendment before you offered by Senator Goodwin. If you would take a moment to look at it. I recognize you just walked in the room. When you're ready to vote, let me know. And it is a roll call vote, Senator Jungbauer. You are ready to vote, Senator?
I'm ready to vote.
All right. Clerk will take the roll.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Hall?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Jungbauer?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Newman?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Limmer?
No.
There being 11 nay votes and one yay vote, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
I have one more I'd like to try here. And it's a verbal one-word amendment, Senator Limmer. And it would just change on line 1.14.
Excuse me, Senator Goodwin, you were working off the A1 amendment?
No, I'm working off of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm sorry, Senator Goodwin.
That's
please proceed.
Okay, so on the bill, on line 1.14, where it says, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only, and after the word only, strike A and put one. One union of one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Minnesota.
Senator Goodwin, it's being pointed out to me by counsel that line 1.9 would also have to be addressed in this.
Oh, amendment. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And 1.9 to change it accordingly. Only one.
At this point, I am going to ask counsel to read the oral amendment back for us, if you would.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members, it would be on page 1, line 9, delete the first and insert 1, and then on page 1, line 14, delete and insert 1. So it would read only one union in both places.
That's
and,
correct.
Counsel, Ms. Pontius, does it also have to be changed on line 1.3?
Mr. Chairman, you can do that in the title, too.
Okay. Senator Goodwin, at this point, you are orally moving that amendment. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I orally moved that amendment, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Do you, roll call being requested. That will be granted to your amendment, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any further comment to your amendment, Senator Goodwin?
No.
Is there any comments or questions by any members of the committee? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Goodwin, I'm not sure. I don't understand why you would put the word one in place of A. Does that mean that a couple would be limited to one? Let's say marriage between a man and woman. Is that what you're intending?
That's correct.
In their lifetime? Or
yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Or one
only
at a
one
time.
Union of one man and one woman.
Senator
Mr. Chair, I understand what Senator Goodwin is attempting to do, but for the purposes of a constitutional amendment, when we want to make it as clear as possible to a voter to easily understand their decision at the time they're balloting, I believe the existing language is superior, and I would oppose the amendment.
Any further comments or questions by any members of the committee? Seeing none and a roll call vote having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Hall?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Jungbauer?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Newman?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Scheid? Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Limmer?
No.
There being 11 nay votes and one yes vote, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. I think what that vote proved and those two amendments proved is that it isn't basically an issue of how sacred marriage is. I think it's an issue of discrimination. And if we were so sure that marriages are that sacred, that this should be something, the first thing that we've ever put in the Constitution that is discriminatory and takes away civil rights, it should be something so important that it just has to, we can't decide on something like this here. It has to be put out for a vote. Well, I will never, in this legislature, even if I get defeated, will never vote to put some language of discrimination in our state constitution. And I feel very strongly about that. I try to vote the way my constituents want me to vote. I survey them. I try to find out their feelings on issues. But I personally have a couple of things I will never do. And one is I will never vote to put discrimination in our constitution, and I will never vote to put capital punishment on the ballot. I cannot live with myself. And those of you who claim to be religious and good Christians, I think you really need to think about what you're doing here, because you're hurting a lot of people.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I think, Senator Limmer, you and I know, I said, I think a lot of things have changed since 2004. I think at that time, I remember the halls were lined with people for weeks going up to the Senate chamber, people who were very vast, vast majority were people strongly in support of legislation very similar to this. And things have changed, and I think it's fair to guess that the Constitution, I don't think this thing will pass, but if it doesn't pass, if this does not become, if this bill does not go on the ballot, or if the voters reject it, that we're going to have same-sex marriage legally recognized in Minnesota in a few years. And I think that as it was 8 or 9 years ago, a lot of the people came here, I think three-quarters of the proponents speaking on behalf of your bill today were people representing various religious faiths or the members of the clergy, I believe, in 6 of the 8 cases. So they're coming here, and obviously they're talking about how their religious faiths relate to it. So it is a matter of faith and how we connect our faiths to our civil laws and, in this case, to the Constitution. And I think in doing so, I think one of the opponents who spoke pointed out that people of faith are all over the board on this, and people of specific faiths are all over the board on this. But I think it's important in doing so, I don't want to challenge anybody's right to their own religious beliefs, but I think it's important that we recognize that I think two of the proponents said that this is the way it's been defined throughout history. But, you know, the Levitical laws that people keep quoting to say how this is sinful and so on in a lot of the faiths here, it's one of 600-somethings. It's very selective reading. I mean, shellfish, eating shellfish is an abomination. Working on the Sabbath, you know, I do that too often. That's a horrid thing. You know, under certain theocracies, you'd have death penalty for that sort of thing. And I think I don't have any problem with people of faith saying they believe strongly in this. But I said, I mean, 2004, whenever it first came up, I said I was opposed to it, not because I didn't think we needed it, but because it was already illegal, but because I thought we ought to change the law and make it legal. And that comes from my faith, too. As a Lutheran, you know, I kind of think that God, I believe in, talks about love and commitment to people. And I feel really strongly about that. And we ought to honor that. That the best thing for kids is that they have parents who are committed to each other. And this is a question. In that case, it comes down to, are we picking? Again, 3/4 of your witnesses were people who were here as faith leaders. Are we going to change the Constitution to pick certain religious views and put them out there? You know, when I say the Bible I read encourages same-sex marriage, I think there are a number of your witnesses who would strongly be bothered by that. They would read it differently. And that's their right to. And I don't think they should be forced in their religions to marry any same-sex couples. 40 years ago, Supreme Court ruled out interracial marriages. And some of the same faiths were out there saying how this was evil, this was sinful, against the word of God. And they could quote plenty of scripture to talk about separation of the races. And you know, I bet 40 years later, I bet you there's still Christians who oppose interracial marriages, but I bet it's not 1 in 100. I bet you a lot of those same churches that spoke against it 40 years ago would perform those marriages now. But to that 1 in 100 that doesn't believe in it, the state should never force them to perform marriages that they don't believe in. And same thing with this. When, and I hope when is soon, we change the law to allow this. Catholic Church, the bishop who is here, I don't think they're going to start allowing them because the law would legally recognize them. I don't think they're going to perform them, and they shouldn't have to, and nobody's asking for that. But the point is, it's come here, it's been pushed because of a lot of religious beliefs. And I think under our Constitution, the thing that's great is the fact that some of these folks, they can read the same scriptures I do, come up with a different conclusion, and they have their right to that, as do I. And so, you know, as we move forward on this, you keep talking about people having a chance to vote on this. And I think we should all have a vote on marriage. My wife and I voted to marry each other. We don't call the word vote, but that's what it was, 30 years ago. And I have 30 and a half years almost now. And I don't think you and I have served in the Senate together for as long as you've been here and in the legislature for longer than that. I may have met your wife once. I think you've met my wife recently even. And I don't think my marriage has affected your marriage or anybody else's marriage in any way, good or bad. If anything, it's good, I suppose, because we've got, a pretty healthy family. And I think that's why it's my wife and my choice to get married. And Senator Dibble, I don't know if he's here right now, but he's been married for, I think, 3 or 4 years now. His marriage isn't recognized in this state, but he's been married nonetheless. And I think he made that choice too. And I just don't see the fact that some people may not think it's appropriate, why that means that we should put in the Constitution that he and his husband don't get the same rights that my wife and I get. And I'm just curious, do you think, or do any of those who are supporting this amendment, do they think that his marriage is going to hurt their marriage or their family any more than mine does? I'm just curious, is there any difference in that? I ask anyone in the committee who's supporting this. Does my marriage affect yours in any negative way, and does Senator Dibbles affect it? I'd love an answer if you think it does.
Well, Mr.
Senator,
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, you've taken a wide circle around this, and I'd like to bring you back to what we're really deciding. We're deciding the opportunity, giving the opportunity to the public to be involved in a policy decision, rather than let
excuse
us,
me, Senator,
a small group of politicians
Senator Limmer,
down here.
Excuse me, if you could pull the mic forward. There's some folks in the back of the room are unable to hear you.
All right.
Thank you.
Senator Marty, I'll try and talk louder also, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, we're taking a wide swing around the issue, and we're getting into a lot of areas that aren't really focused on the decision we're making today. The decision we're making today is whether or not we allow the public to participate in a policy decision on defining marriage. Now, you brought up a number of different issues. I may not remember them all to address them all. You made mention trying to, in some way, I think, trying to compare this issue to the illegality of past interracial relationships. But interracial marriages did not change the definition of marriage. And that's really what we're defining. We're hoping to define by preventing a small group of politicians or even a smaller group of judges to make that decision. And an issue as important as a definition of marriage is really, I believe, more for the universe of Minnesotans to decide rather than a small group of you and me and maybe a judge or two. So I'm not quite sure if the discussion of interracial marriages has much to do with this.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Mark.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, you say this is changing the definition and interracial marriage was not changing. Well, it was changing it in the 1960s when it happened. It was changing it. Senator Dibble is married. Our state doesn't recognize it. But it's changing your definition of marriage, but not his. I mean, that's the whole question about it. And to your point about bringing everybody in to vote on it, again, November 29th, 1980, I was married. Church in South Minneapolis. Full crowd in there. And there were a lot of people there, but none of them had any vote in my marriage. Nobody did. My wife and I, we chose. A minister agreed to perform the ceremony. We set our vows in front of a lot of people and in front of our God. Senator Dibble chose to do the same thing. Why should people be able to vote on whether his marriage is out there or not?
Senator Limmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty and I probably disagree on the issue of whether or not there's a connection to interracial marriage and the definition of marriage. One African-American man marrying one African-American woman, or a white woman, did not change the definition of marriage in Minnesota, or for that matter, any other state. That's what I'm trying to get at. I don't think your comparison is an adequate one.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, in 12 or 13 states, it did change the definition because marriage was between one man and one woman of the same race in those states, and they changed that. The constitutional interpretation by the Supreme Court changed that. And you keep talking about the definition of marriage, which several of your witnesses say has been throughout history. Well, you know, in the Levitical laws that people like to quote on this issue, that was in a society that not only allowed slavery, but they allowed multiple wives. The definition of marriage was one man and many women if they chose. That's a different definition than what you're trying to put in here. And you're changing the definition from historical purposes. And so I can't see why you're saying one is a definition because you choose that you choose what the definition is and you say anybody who changes from that is changing the definition. I'd say your definition is not a historical one.
Ms. Chair, Senator Marty, earlier in your comments you had made a comment about changing perspectives. You're hopeful that someday same-sex marriage will be a fact in our state. And you've even
excuse
said
me
that
one moment, Senator Limmer. You've got to pull the mic in,
the
and
the
folks
again
in the back of the room cannot
right
hear you, and they're really trying to listen to you.
My apologies. Senator Marty, you had made mention that times may be changing. Well, they may be. But again, who's the best determiner of that? Is it you and me? Is it a judge? Or if we are having changing mores, isn't it best to have the public decide this? Isn't it best to give it to them? We have had changes over long periods of time, as you recognized. The Book of Leviticus, I'm not quite sure when that was written. But I do know when it was written in reference to other things. And that was during a time pre-Ten Commandments. It was pre-that standard of law. And it was a lot different world back then than even the time after the law was written. And then, of course, we get into the New Testament references, if you're making biblical references, and that, too, was established at that time. The writing of that time was based on a legal network that defined the areas of the Mideast. Whether it was Jewish or whether it was non-Jewish, it was a law-based culture. And we have a law-based culture, too. We have a law-based culture that kind of changes and flows. And I don't think this does any damage to that changing environment. It is a different way to create a bona fide reference of what marriage is if the public decides to agree with this question.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, just so you're aware, I mean, the Levitical law discussion we're having a little bit about and when they were written and what society they were written for, one with multiple marriages for one man, that I'm not arguing that these folks should be allowed to believe that they can pick some of those laws if they want to pick the one about can't have same-sex marriages, but you can do other things that were forbidden there. That's their choice. They can do that. And I'm not saying that you should take my beliefs and incorporate that into our Constitution either. I'm saying let's keep the religious beliefs out of it. Our laws, our civil laws and our Constitution are supposed to protect the rights of everybody, not just those who agree with you or me or somebody else. The Constitution's to protect our rights, and we don't put rights up for a vote. I mean, in the 1960s, fair housing laws for African Americans, those were voted down in California and states where they had people on the ballot. Those issues on the ballot. We took away people's civil rights many times. And that's the point of our Constitution is to protect our rights, protect the rights of the people who are opposed same-sex marriage. They don't have to get married to somebody of the same sex. They don't have to perform a marriage for somebody of the same sex. But likewise, our Constitution guarantees freedom of conscience for my side of the issue, too.
Senator Letts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sitting here listening to Senator Marty's comments, and I'm checking off the points I wanted to make because you've covered a lot of territory, and I think quite well. But I did want to share my few thoughts on this. I'm a pretty strong believer in the separation of church and state, for the protection of both, the protection of church and for the protection of state. And when the state starts meddling in affairs that are really religious decisions, I think that threatens the independence of the churches, the religious institutions, and the individuals that adhere to those faiths. And it troubles me that we seem to pick and choose between precepts of different faiths and decide that, okay, here's the one that we really want to enshrine, memorialize in our founding documents. It is very, very hard to change a constitution, and there's a reason for that. Because a constitution is not easy to adjust to changing social mores and conscience. But it is susceptible to marketing campaigns, as you can witness in the multiple referenda in California's ballots every election. The millions and millions of dollars that are spent, the advertising, the direct mail, the organizing efforts, the email campaigns. Who's going to turn out? Which side can get their voters to turn out? Which ones are most energized? These are campaigns, much like the campaigns for our own other statewide offices and for our own offices. And even so, you may only have 70 or 80% in Minnesota anyway of the voters voting, making the decisions. And then if something passes, it's there. It's there for a long, long time. And that's why we have a constitution. But there's a reason why we have a representative democracy, too. We were not created as a direct democracy. We were created intentionally as a representative democracy. We are elected in the Senate and in the House, and every local government, city councils, county boards, school boards, same principle, same theory, goes back to our basic civics classes in high school. We have a right to vote as citizens, to make our judgments, to look at the candidates and decide who best represents our views and who, when we can't be there sitting through the hours and hours of testimony and doing the research, whose judgment are we going to trust to make those decisions for us? And if, in the end, when we stand for re-election, we don't measure up to our constituents' measuring stick, they can vote us out. They can vote us out. That's democracy. But that's also the ability to say, you know, antiquarian Latz, who's been there for 50 years, no longer shares our views. We want someone there who does and who's going to be more current with our social mores and our conscience. And that's the way it works. I can guarantee you I will never be here 50 years. and probably not for that reason. But that's representative democracy, and Alexis de Tocqueville was absolutely right, as Rabbi Stockspilker said. We ought to be afraid of the tyranny of the majority. Now, that's not to say that the majority shouldn't rule. The majority does rule, but as Senator Marty indicated, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in particular in both the Minnesota and the United States Constitutions are there specifically to protect the rights of the minorities, to protect the rights of those who don't have the majority views, but who have rights and have beliefs that we believe as a people are so fundamental that even if we disagree vehemently with what they think and what they want to do and what they have to say, if it doesn't have a physical threat to me, then they can do it and they can say it. I can walk out in the street and say just about anything I want. I can't walk into a movie theater and yell fire unless there's really a fire. And that's where we draw some of those lines, because that threatens the physical safety. Well, I'll tell you this. My marriage is not going to be threatened by someone else's gay marriage. It might be threatened by having to work here tonight until midnight, depending on how the agenda after this goes. There goes my date night, I guess. But I don't feel threatened one bit, as Senator Marty was indicating. I don't feel threatened one bit if a same-gender couple want to get married. Doesn't bother me a bit. All the power to them. In fact, there are a lot of relationships like that that last a whole lot longer and are much more filled with love and nurturing and caring and support for each other than opposite gender marriages. What I found troubling was a suggestion that the decisions that we make here are not quite as important as a decision on whether gay marriage ought to be allowed in Minnesota or whether we ought to enshrine the notion of marriage as one man, one woman, so it should go to the ballot. For a lot of people in Minnesota, I think the decisions that we make around here, like cutting off health insurance for kids, is a lot more important than whether or not two men can get married. If someone's three-year-old doesn't get care with a doctor when they need that care, if I were a parent, I'd be a lot more worried about that than whether or not two men or two women could get married. I think the decisions we make around here about not providing enough financial support to the early childhood education system and screening system is a lot more important for those 2 and 3 year olds that may need that early screening or that extra help that we're all as taxpayers going to pay for when they can't catch up and they aren't able to be successful and they end up on the public dole. For the lives of those 2 and 3 year olds or 4 and 5 year olds, I think a lot of people would say that's a lot more important. And we make those decisions around here every spring. When we decide we're not going to provide enough funding for our K-12 system, we end up with classroom sizes as 32 or 35, so no student can get the individual attention that they need. I would say that's a lot more important a decision around here for a lot of people whose kids are in the schools. Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I was also troubled by the notion that those who are in opposite gender marriages are the victims in all of this. They are the vast majority in our society. They have all of their rights already enshrined in statute and in case law and in culture in a lot of places. And they didn't have to worry about whether or when they should come out. They didn't have to worry about being bullied because of their sexual orientation in school, or beat up, or worse, killed. It's really troubling to me that they're now trying to characterize themselves as victims. To me, that argument's a complete non-starter. When we get to the question of a public or of a referendum or a constitutional amendment, you know, it's not only the public's opportunity to be involved. That's not their only chance to be involved in a public policy discussion. We get thousands of emails. I get thousands of emails every session around here. Every senator does. And mail and phone calls. And we all have listening sessions in our districts. And we all stand for election every 2 or 4 years. What I want to suggest is that this move to make this a constitutional amendment, it's a political tactic. That's all it is. It's a political tactic. It's because there isn't a level of confidence in the statute. It's because constitutions are hard to change once they are amended. So if it's successful, it's there for many, many, many years. I think we need to look at the motive, not just the political tactic. The motive here is one and the same as the motive behind the state statute that now prohibits these marriages. And the motive is to enshrine the rights of marriages as it's currently defined between opposite gender persons. And the tactic to do that by a constitutional amendment is just that. I grew up as a minority. I'm still a minority, religiously, in my community. And occasionally, I'm reminded of that on the Senate floor. and I think it's a travesty. And I don't think anyone should have to do that. And if we are going to enshrine in our state constitution essentially religious views that will remind a segment of our population that they are a minority, and not only remind them, but specifically discriminate against them, seems to me that's just not appropriate. Not going to say it's unconstitutional, although it should be, because we have a process, and if it were to be passed, it would be constitutional. But to me, that's not American. It wasn't the precepts upon which our country was founded, which was religious freedom. Religious freedom. It was those persecuted who escaped from Europe to come to a country where they could freely observe their own religions. So let's allow religious freedom for everyone, not just for the majority. I think we ought to vote down this bill.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I know you're a good attorney, and we've certainly seen representation of that in this committee, and you built quite a foundation for your argument. Some of the things I'd like to talk about, you brought up the California referendums, the multiple referendums that are typical of California, that's allowable under their law in their constitution. Instead of getting permission from the legislature to have the public decide something on a public referendum, like we have, they can just collect a petition list, and once they get the qualifying legal number, they can put anything on the ballot. Here, we have to, if citizens want a change in public policy, they have to come to us, and then we give the people permission. Personally, I don't really care for that type of what I might consider a rather elitist way of controlling public discussion. But nevertheless, that was the law in California. You talked about that we didn't create a representational democracy, and I know what that means. It's a total representational, meaning the public would vote on everything. And that's true. But nevertheless, even in our Constitution, it allows for the public to consider and vote and decide on, in most cases, singular issues that are put before them. The reference to more important issues, I suppose that's... I guess you determine the beauty is in the eye of the beholder of what issue is the priority. And you and I both know that being statesmen in the legislative session, we do deal with health care and education and budgets. Minnesota is a complex state, and it is reflected in a complex legislature. I think in the Senate we have 13 to 16 committees that are isolating our focus on all of the problems. And this legislature is not standing still waiting for whether or not Warren Limmer's bill on a constitutional amendment is going to take place or not. We have committees meeting all the time. So I really don't want to create, I want to make sure that the people back home realize that we are doing a great amount of work in the legislature as we take time out of one day in the Senate Judiciary Committee to consider this public policy decision. As for the political tactic idea, you know, a few short years ago, the state of California had this issue before it during, of all things, a presidential election. President Obama was being considered for presidency that year, and although President Obama won in California, so did the California version of a marriage amendment. That didn't draw out any more conservative voters to change the outcome in political races. And so I think the more and more, and there's a long history of 30-some states, some people could say that, yes, it probably did, and others would say definitely not. There was no impact. And in this state, it has a little bit more of a populist yet liberal tradition. It may be close to a two-party state now as opposed to maybe 20 years ago. I would probably agree with Senator Marty. I'm not sure if this passes or not, but the most important thing is on this issue with the potential political, or not political, but the policy considerations, the consequences that could occur if it was not passed and we moved in a new direction as Senator Marty would like to see, I think it is important for the public, the entire population, to consider this.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Latz, of course, pointed out that we have a constitutional republic for the purpose of protecting rights and preventing the tyranny of the majority. And, of course, that's correct. But marriage isn't a right. Nowhere in the federal Constitution, the United States Constitution, nowhere in the Minnesota Constitution is marriage stated as a right. In fact, this legislature, with the governor's signature, could choose to discontinue the recognition of marriage at all in this state. We could do that. We could pass a law. It could be signed by Governor Dayton to just absolutely not acknowledge marriage. And there really are only two reasons why the civil government does and should acknowledge marriage outside of any sort of religious influence that may come to bear on it, and that would be, first, to acknowledge and provide the institution for the rearing of children that sociological studies demonstrate to be a superior one. And the second thing, frankly, would be to create the relationship that confers upon people certain benefits, some, many, financial. That's the real reason. So clearly, Senator Latz is correct. It would be highly improper to take things that are our rights within the Constitution and subject them to the popular vote. That would risk that tyranny of the majority. But marriage is not a right. Nobody with this legislation is intending to dictate how Senator Dibble, my colleague, or anyone else lives, or who they have the relationships with. The question is simple. How are we, through the civil government, going to define marriage? Going to define something that is not ensconced in the Constitution as a right and that we could literally eliminate with legislation signed by the governor? And all we're saying is this is an ongoing debate that's been going on for a long time, resulted in the DOMA legislation, and yet that's not going to be an end to it because, as Senator Marty said, he would prefer to see affirmative legislation promoting same-sex marriage. So all this is doing is saying we have this entity. It's not a right, because if it were, the DOMA law would have been struck down, if not by the Minnesota Supreme Court, by the United States Supreme Court. It's not a right. It's a privilege, and we should allow the people to decide how that privilege is going to be granted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have just a couple of follow-up thoughts. One is all the members that are in here, at least the Republican members, if they're on budget conference committees, they're not doing that now. And, in fact, we're spending a lot of our time. All the policy committees are spending their time this week in policy hearings, and there aren't any conference committees scheduled for the budget, as far as I'm aware. We asked on the floor yesterday if there were any, and there aren't any. And not scheduled for this weekend either, as far as we are aware. So the clock is ticking. We're getting close to May 23rd, our constitutional deadline for adjourning. There's not even a budget by the legislature yet. So the time we're spending here does take away from other work of the legislature. I don't think we can avoid that. There's been some note about concern about activist judges. Well, I I think there's at least a little bit of irony in that concern, since at least for the foreseeable future, the majority of the judges on the Minnesota Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals will have been Tim Pawlenty appointees. So if they're activists, the conservatives have only themselves to blame for it. I guess that's all I want to share.
I would indicate that in terms of conference committees, I can see Senator Hoffman is here. I am on, and I are both on the Health and Human Services Conference Committee. And I can tell you, Senator Latz, that in the past 2 weeks, we have been putting in long, long hours on that conference committee. There are a couple of days this week I put in 15 hours not on that conference committee, but I will tell you it greatly contributed to the number of hours that we have been putting in. So we are working, and we are working hard. I can tell you that the chair of the Health and Human Services Conference Committee adjourned yesterday and rescheduled the conference committee for next Monday. So we will be meeting and we will be working. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was Senator Limmer that said that, you know, the consequences, talked about the consequences that could occur if this does not pass. The consequences that could occur if this does not pass affects no one except the people that are united, the couple that's uniting. I don't understand why people spend so much of their time worrying about how other people are living when it affects nobody else. I think those people need to find something to do. I really do, because of what I don't have time to think about Senator Marty's marriage or Senator Latz or yours either, Mr. Chair. I don't even know if you're married, but I could care less about your marriages, quite frankly. You know, I mean, that's true for most of us. It does not affect us. And this seat that we hold, it's not my seat. It's not your seat, Senator Latz, or your Senator Ingebrigtsen. This is the people's seat. And they put us here to make some of these decisions. And they also put us here, even maybe not always at their best interest, but to think about what we do and to not discriminate, to expect that we will rise above that, even if sometimes they can't. They expect us to rise above some of this petty stuff and to get on with the business of government. And they can bring their views here, and they can bring religious views here, but how many people have ever done that and really expected it to get into the Constitution? The Constitution, the Bill of Rights that protects people, protects the majority, the minority from the majority. Read the Constitution in Minnesota. There is nothing like this. There is no language like this anywhere in our state constitution. Not even close. It's rights of people. It's not taking away rights of people. It's the rights of the people. And that's the way it should be. And Mr. Chair, I don't know how many here know this, but, you know, right now at the Historical Society, there's a Republican Constitution and a Democratic Constitution. So this fighting between the parties isn't new. But I could say that maybe we should ask to have this put in the Republican Constitution, not the Constitution focuses on all the people of Minnesota, because this is discrimination, clear and simple. It's just clear and simple, because this does not affect anybody's life. It does not affect your life whatsoever. And there's no reason for you to be out there trying to affect the lives of other people when it has no bearing on you or your family. And if it's just because you don't like it, that's not a good enough reason. Or just because your religious beliefs are against it, that's not a good enough reason. I think, members, you need to think about when you sit here in the people's seats that you're not going to be here forever. Right now, you feel pretty proud of yourselves for going through the election and working hard for 5 months to get the seat, but you're not going to be here forever. But you are going to leave here, and you're going to go back into your communities, and you're going to have to think about what you do here. And are you going to be proud of the fact that you voted to put discrimination in the Constitution? Do you think you're always going to be proud of that? Because I got to tell you, I'm not proud of a lot of things I've done in my past, and especially anything I've ever done that would harm people that had nothing to do with me. I just think you really need to think about how you're going to feel about this someday. Is this the right thing to do, to put this in the Constitution, or to give it to the people to put in the Constitution? We could probably put in the Constitution, do you want to start hanging people again? You know, we could probably put in a lot of things here if you're talking about asking questions, people, of values, of value-laden questions to the voters. There's a lot of things we could put in there, but those things aren't in our Constitution, Senator Limmer. They are not. They're not even close to anything like this that's in our U.S. or our Minnesota Constitution. It's not discriminatory, and this is craziness.
Senator Harrington.
Mr. Chair, the term actually that you all kind of were talking around is miscegenation. I can remember when I was a kid, or not a kid, I was a young adult, and I wanted to go down to Mississippi, and because I was engaged at that time to a young lady from New Hampshire, I was told that that was probably not a really good idea, because at that time, Mississippi and Little Rock, Arkansas, and a couple other places still had laws that forbade interracial marriage, and the laws were called miscegenation laws. Now, you may make the case that this is not, that you don't think that this is a case that's similar to miscegenation, but I will tell you that, in fact, it is. That, in fact, in the United States Senate in the 1920s, a senator by the name of Senator Clapper proposed the Marriage Block Bill. And the Marriage Block Bill was to nationalize all the rules and regulations around marriage, and very specifically to note that marriage was to be forbidden between the white race and the black race, or the Negro race is how it would have been framed in that time, and between the white race and the yellow race, or the Asian race as we would refer to it now. This is very similar to that Marriage Block Bill. It does not, it seems to me, fit at all with the Minnesota Constitution or the United States Constitution. It does not fit with me, with my sense of what our values are. It does not fit at all with me with the values of what I really cherish probably most of all, that Declaration of Independence. We talk about the fact that our government is supposed to be about life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. I cannot see in this bill anything that promotes life. I cannot see anything in this bill that promotes liberty. If anything, it seems to restrict the liberty of a number. And it certainly does not seem to me in any way, shape, or form that this will promote the pursuit of happiness in our state or in our country. It strikes me that this does nothing positive for our community, that it does not, in fact, enhance the livability of the state of Minnesota, that it sends a chilling message that it is okay to discriminate. It's the same kind of message that Senator Clapper was sending in the 1920s when he said it was okay to ban whites and blacks and whites and Asians from getting married. It was a symbol that blacks and Asians were less than. And I think this language sends the message that gays in Minnesota are less than. And I know the folks that are on this committee, and I would be shocked that any of you would stand up and make that statement that gays are less than. I find it very, very difficult to believe. I also find it difficult to believe that, and I apologize for my tardiness from getting here. I've been in two other committees, and as everybody else has all talked about, being very busy trying to get here. But all the arguments I've heard so far are religious arguments. I thought we were a country that was founded based on religious freedom, which to some extent says that not only are we not forced to have a state religion, but that we are free to practice no religion. It seems to me that the arguments that have been brought forward are religious arguments, that in fact we are injecting religion into the statutory language. And find that very puzzling in a state that, in a state and a country where religious freedom was, in fact, one of those founding principles that people came here for. So while it may be difficult for some to see how this law or this amendment to the Constitution is similar to miscegenation, you may not be able to see how similar it is to race baiting and to racial discrimination laws from years gone by. I sit here to tell you that that the language of this law is very similar to the marriage block of the 1920s. And I can tell you that the values of that time are not the values of our Minnesota, and I hope they're not your values. And so I argue in not passing this piece of legislation.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot of comments I can make, but I'm going to try and steer us back to what this bill is about. And this is about a constitutional amendment. And Senator Thompson is absolutely right, because I have the Minnesota State Constitution right here in my hand. And I perused the Bill of Rights, and there is no right to marriage in this, in the Bill of Rights in the State Constitution. But there is in Article 9 amendments to the Constitution, Section 1, amendments ratified. And I'm going to read just a small part of this to you, because I think that's what we're seeing here. A majority of the members elected to each house of the legislature may propose amendments to this Constitution. Proposed amendments shall be proposed with the laws passed at the same session and submitted to the people for their approval or rejection at general election. If a majority of all the electors voting at the election vote to ratify an amendment, it becomes part of the Constitution. If two or more amendments are submitted at the same time, voters shall vote for one or against each separately. Now, we talked about our founders of this state and the knowledge that they gave us when they gave us our Bill of Rights and our Constitution. And they also gave us the right later on to amend our Constitution as the people of the state of Minnesota saw fit. And that is all that this bill is doing, is it's putting the question to the people of the state of Minnesota, is marriage between a man or a woman, yes or no? And that is something that we owe to the people of our state. They either vote it up or they vote it down, but they will vote for it, and they will vote where they believe it to be.
Senator Thompson.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll pass. The points I was going to make have all been made.
Any further comments or questions, Senator Engelbrecht?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can certainly appreciate the comments made today by both sides, rather emotional comments, and I don't think anybody thought that would be anything different when we came here this morning. But an awful lot of rhetoric has been thrown around that we're not doing our budgets and things like that. We talked about that, Senator Latz, on the floor yesterday. We can go on, and I'm sure we will. If this meets the floor, we're going to have those debates again. But I do. I'm a plain thinker. I do happen to agree with Senator Goodwin when she said this seat is not my seat; it's the people's seat. And I can only speak for the people in my district, and the people in my district by a overwhelming majority want the right to vote for this amendment. And that's why I'm going to vote today for this amendment to move on. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, now two of those who say they're supporting this have described marriage as not a right, and I'm not going to argue it's in our Constitution or the national one. Universal Declaration of Human Rights does say people's right to choose their spouse is a universal human right, which is, frankly, enough for me. I frankly think that Senator Hoffman and Senator Thompson ought to have the right to marry who they wish. I think that's a very important human right, and I think it's to say that it's not in our Constitution that's right. As a matter of fact, it's not in our Constitution. That's why some people are denied that legal right here. I think it's time to change that. And Mr. Chair, I want to, one, because I don't think Senator Limmer asked for a roll call, and two, I'd like to ask everyone in there voting for it to remember one of the speakers, Mr. Wilfart, spoke. He's still in the room. His son didn't make it back. But what his son would come back to, he told, he can't marry the person of his choice. And that's what we're doing. We're taking away rights from people like that. I don't know how he can come here after his son died 8 weeks ago. It takes a lot of courage and guts. I think for his son alone, and there are tens of thousands of people like his son, who have the same right that I have to pick somebody they love and fall in love and marry them and raise a family. Putting this in the Constitution, I'd like to know what you say to Mr. Wilfer. Andrew's not here, but his father is. Say, let's not take away those rights. So I ask for a roll call and urge you to defeat this.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call is granted. Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, I think it was a year ago maybe, and I know you're very passionate about this. You wrote some op-eds, and they actually ended up in my rural papers out in west central Minnesota. And at the time, I thought about responding back, but I did agree with you on it. It's time. It was time. And I think your statement was it was time to make it legal in the state of Minnesota for gay marriage. I agree with the concept of it's time, and I think it's time now to let those that put us here, that were smart enough to put us here, to let them make that decision. Frankly, it's too big a decision for anybody in this room to make, and I think overwhelmingly you will see that just the chance of them, the folks to participate that put us here, will have that opportunity to say either yes or no to this once and for all.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, I think everybody should have that choice. I should, you should, Senator Dibble should, Mr. Wilfert's son, every other person in the state ought to have the choice of who they marry. What this does is take away the choice of a lot of those people.
Senator Limmer, any final comments before we move forward?
Mr. Chair, I think we've had a thorough vetting of the issue. We've had plenty of discussion. We've not only focused uniquely on the bill itself and the critical focus of whether or not we allow the public to define this issue, or whether we simply say no to the public and as a legislator do it ourselves. I've stated here before that I think this is an issue important enough for public review and question, dialogue, and decision. And if passed, this amendment would eventually end up for that decision to be made in the 2012 November ballot. I think we've covered just about everything we can cover in this, and I would close my discussion. I know that we'll probably have to go find Senator Jungbauer again. But nevertheless, I stand up.
Very good. Just the only comment that I have at this point is I want to thank everybody that is here in attendance and has sat through the presentation. I want to thank you for being so courteous and so civil. I fully realize that no matter how this vote goes, somebody is going to be disappointed. But again, you have been very polite, and I simply want you to know that I appreciate it very much. Senator Jungbauer is now reentered and is here. And if I understand correctly, Senator Limmer, the motion is to recommend that this bill pass and be sent to the Rules Committee.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
That's fine, Senator Limmer. It's my understanding that the proper motion would be that
yes.
The bill be recommended to pass and be sent to the Rules Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that, what's our Senate file number? 1308.
1308.
I move that Senate file 1308 be recommended to pass and proceed to the Rules Committee.
Motion has been made that the Senate file 1308 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Rules Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Hall?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Jungbauer?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Scheid? Senator Harrington?
No.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
The vote being 8 in favor and 4 against, the motion passes and the bill will be sent to the Rules Committee. Members, we do have further bills that we are going to be considering later, and I believe we are going to adjourn until Senator.
What time do we have now? 4:30.
It's 3:30 right now. How about a recess of say 4:30? Would that be,
Mr. Chair?
Or would you rather come
Mr.
back?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adjourn until 4:30.
No, recess. We're going to recess.
Recess till 4:30.
Okay, we will be in recess until 4:30 and back in this room. Thank you, members.